This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Ian Boltzmann on FUBAR Radio.
You can genuinely all fuck off. Hello, welcome to the show, and you are welcome to it. Coming up on the show today, 4:30 p.m, friend of the show, Rhys Finlay, is in the studio.
It's the 7th of October today.
Today is the 7th of October. Coming up on the show today on the 7th of October, friend of the show, Rhys Finlay, is in the studio. He's going to be talking about his graphic novel, Reaffirmation, coming to terms with an autism diagnosis. Fuck me. My reading's not great.
Through October, and you're in it.
I'm actually in it. I've seen that bit. Slimmed me down and everything. He genuinely has. Then it's 5 o'clock. Otis Mensah is in the studio as a friend of the station.
Friend of the station, yeah.
I've never met Otis.
You're going to love him.
Am I?
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a challenge. He's going to be talking about his new EP, Rap Poetics, which is released in October. Don't forget, it is October at the moment. It's the 7th of October.
It is, yeah.
Bit of a dispute going on at the moment in that Nat thinks it might be rap politics.
No, it is poetics. I just can't read straight today.
Rap poetics, okay.
Poetics.
Then at 5:30, Ed Hughes, perfect stranger to both of us.
Yeah, and you.
Will be in the studio talking about his role in the Netflix series Bolivar.
Which is on now on Netflix.
Well, everything's on Netflix now, isn't it?
It might be about to come out. This isn't. It's there.
Nah, that's always on it. Everything's on it, mate.
Ian Boltzmann.
Hello, hello, welcome to the show. Nat just
hit
the mic and herself.
With my headphones.
Today is the 7th of October, hello.
Already.
It's not though, is it?
It's flown by.
It's not, when we're recording
this.
It's
30th
of September. And good luck on this show, because both myself and Natalie are in... We both met today at the studio... Both wanting to whine about something else.
Yeah, we both were just like, let's just get it out now.
Yeah. And we're both in proper stinking moods.
I think so.
Well, as a caveat, can I say as well, because we discussed this off air, and I said to you, so don't, if I'm being snappy or whatever, don't think it's aimed at you, because it's not.
Okay.
It's something else.
God, I'm so nervous.
No, I'm going to try not to be.
Maybe I'll be snappy with you back. Maybe we'll be snappy at each other.
Well, and you'd have every right to be.
Let's not do it with the guests, though.
Well, exactly. But they'd have every right to be snappy back. But... I'm putting it on the record now as a caveat that I'm not in a mood with you, Nat.
Okay.
I'm in a mood with something from my real life.
Yeah.
Real professional life, I guess. And I have been for about a month.
Okay.
With the same thing.
All right.
And I'm at snapping point today.
Gosh. Okay.
I feel at snapping point today.
Okay.
So I'm going to try and be professional. Shouldn't even be a try in that. I should just be professional.
You will be.
But we're both aware that the other one... He's in a stinking mood about something. And also the actions of others as well. Both are things. I'm not going to say what my thing is. I'm not going to talk about it. But it's both things out of our control, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. That is caused by the actions of another person when it could definitely have been prevented.
Yeah. Yeah. Unnecessary grief for two people who are very busy and don't need that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I am almost too tired to be snappy. I'm more likely to start crying or throw a mug against a wall.
Oh, that'd be good. I want the crying thing. Would you think you could cry?
I'd have to cry now. I had tears in my eyes
when I saw you actually well up a little bit then.
Yeah. God.
Would it be bad if I pushed you into tears?
Yeah, I think so. Although it might be a great clip for your no.
From a talk radio one.
I think. Well, Piers Morgan gets everyone crying on his show, doesn't he? I mean, his chat show thing that he does.
Does he?
I have never watched it, but I've seen the clips of it where everyone
I feel tearful
cries.
When I just hear the word.
Maybe that's
Piers
what made
Morgan.
Me tear up, because I was thinking in my head, Piers Morgan.
I've seen you cry before, though. You've cried before.
I have cried.
So you've cried on
not
my
on
shoulder
air,
before.
To you. I have cried in front of you before. Yeah, that is true.
So it's not, you know, you're in a safe space here now.
I just think
it might be good radio if you do break down in tears.
Well, here's my first tear. If Rhys Finlay doesn't come in with a portrait of me drawn, I've told him he knows the rules. That'll be my first tear of the day.
So have you got a little needy beef that's going on, which is that Rhys Finlay, this new graphic novel he's done, and by the way, I've skipped through it.
Yeah.
I didn't even know Rhys was coming in today. He sent it over to me. I've skipped through it. He said, oh, you're on this page. Will you have a look and make sure that's all right? So obviously I went to that, and it was actually before my last show here. And I checked that. I was like, oh yeah, that's absolutely fine. Of course, yeah, no problems at all. And I said, I'm gonna read it. I'm not done yet.
Okay.
But it's on my computer there, ready to read. But in the bit in his book, which is him coming into the studio and all that, and going out to London, and sort of the stresses of going to London, and that sort of thing. You're not in it.
What? Well, that's good. That's welling me up straight away.
So that's why you're now getting all needy and going, he's got to draw a picture of you.
I didn't know about this. I told him about, like, you know, no pressure, but if you want to come in the studio, I need a picture. And he said he was going to find one on the dark web.
Do you know what? I'm actually not sure he even mentioned you. I'm honestly not sure that
he
does.
Okay, so we've got two guests today on the show, Otis Mensah and Ed Hughes.
But it's not, you're a producer.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's fine. I'm fine with that.
Don't need to, you know...
I don't need to.
Constantly wailing about behind the scenes people.
You're the star. You're the talent.
I am the talent, aren't I?
That's what presenters are called, aren't they? The talent.
Should we do that? Should we try and get my ego up a little bit? Because I don't think I'm particularly ego-led. Do you think I am?
No.
No, but like, genuine question. You can say if you think I am. I don't think I am ego-led. I don't think I have an ego in that sort of traditional showbiz sense.
I think you have less of an ego than some other people who are in the public eye.
It's a very
in some way.
Diplomatic answer there.
No, what I mean is that I feel like you have a slightly defense mechanism to things.
Okay, well, let's carry that through. What does that mean?
As in, for sometimes when we've had guests on or things, it's easier to start with a negative outlook to, or, you know, are the guests going to turn out? Is this going to happen?
Oh,
is that person?
That's
it's
part of the shtick, isn't it?
You know, it kind of is. But then sometimes when we've had a discussion before the show about guests and we're like, oh, I'm not sure I've got anything in common with that. And then they leave and we're like, friend of the show. They're great.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it's easier sometimes maybe for you to go in with that mindset, because then if they turn out to be something that they don't get the show or whatever, then we can be like, oh, that was right. Actually, we were right in the first place.
But I think it's funny.
Okay. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, I think going, oh, brilliant, fucking June Sarpong's in. Like, do you know? I think that's funny.
And then she goes away. We're like, we're in love with June.
Yeah, she's
Sarpong.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But that's an example. That's the first one that came to my head.
Yeah.
But you're right. I will sometimes say to you, oh, for fuck's sake, when you tell me a guest.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever gone, oh, unbook them.
Oh, no, you haven't said that, but you've gone like, oh, I don't have anything to say to them, or I'm not sure about them, or and it's always been fine.
I mean, the painful and very dramatic truth is I don't have anything to say to anybody.
You do?
No, I really don't.
Oh, good.
Like, it's all faked. Like, every interaction is faked.
That's not true, because they're in there for a long time with a fake conversation, though.
Yeah, but, you know, the starting point to that is one of going, well, I've got the ear.
Okay.
So I've got to do it.
Might as well speak to you whilst you're sat here.
Yeah, but I'm not going to ask them all the normal,
well, you can ask
boring
Otis
promo questions
today about rap and hip-hop.
Yeah. Ask him about rap.
Rap.
So, Otis, tell me about rap.
Yeah, yeah. And then Ed Hughes, we can talk to him about Bolivar.
Yeah.
And
Bolivar.
Bolivar.
Bolivar. Bolivar. Bolivar. Bolivar. Can we do that?
Please, that would be fun, actually.
Can we actually get... Can you have a little look? Can you have a look and see if you can find me some karaoke songs from Oliver?
What?
From Oliver Twist.
Oh,
it's actually just called Oliver, from the musical. And see if we can... Anytime it says Oliver, we can put it into that and I'll just completely misunderstand what the series is.
You just saw the backing track. I think it's a Colombian. It's Colombian, I believe. Is it a Colombian take on Oliver Twist?
Is that what it actually is?
It's not.
I thought it genuinely was.
No, but that would be amazing. No. It's not about that.
I've got a mate who, I don't know if he's still doing it, but he was rewriting Oliver.
Well, good luck with that press release. It's the smallest
font
I've ever
that.
Seen
I'm
in
not
my life.
Glasses either. I have a mate who was rewriting Oliver.
Oh, okay.
Honestly, I'll tell you off air what it was, because I think it's such a good idea someone would nick it. But I'll tell you, Nat.
Sorry, I'm reading.
But I'll tell you about it off air. Remind me to tell you, because it's a really good idea, really strong idea.
Okay.
It's reappropriating Oliver for something else.
Ah, okay.
I want to go back to this idea of not wanting to talk to people.
What do you mean, guests?
People
generally.
Yeah.
Outside the studio as
I
well.
I think I have a very, very, and I mean very limited amount of people in my life who I actually don't mind when I get a message from them.
Oh, am I one of them?
it's a very limited. No, you know what I mean? Yeah. Any other message is actually a pain.
Oh, sometimes. Do you ever have this where your phone goes and instead of going, oh, have a look, you think, oh, Christ, what's this now?
Yeah, you just go, fuck, sake.
You're just like, who's text me now? Like, what? Come on. I do have that if I'm at home particularly. I think, oh, God. Which is why I've changed my WhatsApp. So nobody knows when I'm online. I've had it. I was like, I'm sick of this blue tick nonsense.
Oh, right.
So like,
I think mine's always been set to not.
I can't remember why I've held out so long on this, but.
I've got to a point now where somebody suggested to me this morning to get a burner phone. Genuinely.
This is Breaking Bad. What do you mean? Why?
No, to get a phone that only the people that I don't mind hearing from have the number to.
That's actually a really good idea.
So I can turn my phone off.
That would work, wouldn't it? That's a good idea.
It would work, but at the same time, I have a huge resentment about that. It's like, why should I have to do that?
Can you...
Why is me turning my phone off not enough? Why do I then get grief for having my phone off?
Oh, so even if your phone's off, how do you get grief, though? When you turn it back on, messages from people.
So increasingly shitty and pissy when you haven't responded for a while.
I don't like people that do that. Kind of irritate me where if they've messaged you, and I'm sure you have it too, and you haven't replied because God forbid you might be busy having a life or doing something else, that you get the follow up message going, hey, are you okay? You haven't replied to my message. You're like, well, there's obviously a reason for that, isn't there?
Like, I remember my mum years ago, my mum doesn't do this now at all, but years ago, I remember answering the phone to her and she went, I've been trying to call you all day.
Well, I'm not in.
And I was like, this isn't the hotline. It's not.
Yeah.
And it was that idea that it just simply wasn't acceptable that I wasn't taking someone's call.
Yeah.
And so this isn't about my mum this at the moment, but that was that, and I had it out with her there then, but I was like, that's not what this is. It's not
right. No.
I will reply when I can reply.
Exactly, right?
But I think I have people in my life who when they send messages, there is a underlying pressure to respond.
Yeah.
Do you know
what
I mean?
Yeah.
So there's an underlying thing of, and if you don't respond, then another one comes through.
Oh God, yeah.
And it's like, yeah.
No, I think very, very annoying. And actually, I was reading an interview at the weekend. You know Risa Fans, the actor?
Yes.
I kind of identify with it.
I know him really well.
Do you? Yeah. I love him. If you know him really well, get him on the show.
He wouldn't come on a show.
Why?
He doesn't. He's embarrassed by his accent.
His Welsh accent.
Yeah, he's really embarrassed by it. Same reason we can't get Dean Burnett on. Because it Risa Fans. Same as Dean Burnett. They just come on giving it. Right, okay, the beach.
We've had Dean on.
I know.
Once, twice maybe. Dean's a friend of the show, isn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. There's a big pause.
Sorry,
there.
No, I didn't. It took me a moment to register what you said. I was thinking about something else.
Risa Fans, though, and I think this would apply to you in certain respects to me, is that he is very, very comfortable with his own company. Mm. And he says that one of his worst or most traits is that he can easily spend 2 weeks without speaking to anybody. And someone has to come and say, right, you need to come out now, Reese. You need to speak to someone else.
Yeah.
I think that's easily done.
But I do have people in my life who I keep in close contact with, and I'm happy to keep in close contact with. You know, it isn't a problem because they're not high maintenance in any way. Right. Do you know what I mean? It's just like we are both, I presume, getting pleasure from the correspondence.
Yes, yeah.
You know, so it's when it's not. It's when it's, you know, well, whatever. But why are you tired?
Because my name.
Well, you are arsey as well. I know you're tired, but you're arsey.
I am arsey because that's a lot of
Why are you tearful, Nat?
Yeah,
come on.
That's just a response. It's because my neighbours.
Before you tell me this, have you ever thought of a little golden retriever dying? Just a little puppy.
Oh, God.
Just a little puppy.
They're not my favourite dogs.
What's your favourite one?
I don't know, a little one.
Well, I said a little
one. Oh, the Andrex puppy one.
Yeah. Oh, I think they're labs, actually. But either way.
They're gold.
Imagine that little Andrex puppy. Imagine they're doing an advert, right? They're filming an advert for it.
Yeah.
And you've got the little puppy. It's jumping about in all the soft toilet papers.
Very cute.
It's getting all wrapped up in it. It's doing that thing with its paws over its snout.
Oh, that's cute.
Like that, because a bit of toilet roll's gone up its nose. It's like, ooh, it's like, oh, look at it, adorable. And then, hey presto, a jib. You know what a jib is? It's a camera. It's a camera on a stick. So it's basically, you know, when they do swooping shots, that's called a jib.
No. Oh,
so one of them, camera, the jib flies in, and honestly, they're lethal.
Are they? Really, you have to duck.
No, they feel like they're closer than they are. Okay. I used to always say this when I did warm-up. I used to say to the audience, it feels closer than it is. It's not going to hit you, don't panic.
What if it fell off?
Well, how prescient of you, because the jib flies over. Now, because Andrex, when they do...
Barney, let's call it Barney.
Yeah,
the
Barney,
little cute
cute golden retriever.
Oh.
Because Andrex, within this fantasy story, have decided to use quite a lot of work experience in there as well. Somehow, somewhere along the prep, a work experience has attached the camera to the jib. Now, they've not put it in properly.
Sorry, I wasn't listening. They've attached a puppy to the jib.
No, the camera to the jib.
The camera. Are they not supposed to see?
Okay. Yeah, but they've not. It's a work experience.
I drifted off to a moment.
They've not done it right.
Oh,
they've not done it right.
Okay.
So the jib swings over. Now, I know what you think.
Yeah.
You're thinking it's going to fall off and kill the dog.
It is going to.
No,
it's not.
The jib loses momentum and drops.
Okay.
It doesn't hit the dog.
Okay, good.
It lands down by the side of the dog.
Fine.
That at the moment is rolling about in loads of toilet paper, right? Unused. But the jib carries on its momentum, right?
Oh, God.
So what it does is the unconnected camera that's not connected properly, there's now a gap.
It's a
Yeah. There's now a gap between the camera and the jib. That catches the fur of the dog. The jib carries on swinging. It takes the dog up into the air, smashes it through a window, right? Right? The dog doesn't go clean through the window. The dog, this, remember the little cute puppy?
Very cute. It doesn't know what's happening.
Look at his eyes. He looks terrified.
Yeah, of course.
He looks terrified. He's not gone straight through the window. He's now impaled on the jagged spikes.
Why are you doing this?
That have broke the window, right?
Is he dead?
No. No.
Let it put him out of his misery at this point.
It's not going to die in the story.
Oh, no. Okay, good.
Right?
Good. Good.
So you, at the moment, you've got a little puppy Andrex dog.
Impaled on a window.
There are other toilet rolls available.
Yeah.
Impaled on the jagged spikes of a broken window.
Oh, God.
Obviously, it's bleeding profusely. But it's not that that's upsetting. Even though there's a bit of, like, inside. A bit of its insides are hanging out. But it's not that that's upsetting. It's its eyes.
What's happened to its eyes?
It's just looking down, like, it doesn't know what's happening. It's got no idea what's happening. It's just looking to people and, like...
Why's no one helping it?
Yeah, no, the reason no one's helping it is because the jib has flown back up again. It's a top window, this. No one can get to the window.
Also, it's stuck too far up. There's no... I don't imagine a ladder would get up that high.
They haven't got a ladder.
They haven't got a ladder.
Why would they have a ladder?
How's he going to get off the window? He can't jump. He'll die.
It's going to be there. He can't jump because he's impaled on glass shards now.
And he won't think about smashing the glass because then he might fall out the window.
She's clearly not going to cry.
It's too emotional.
Oh, it's a better show offer.
This was like some sort of...
It's a miles better show offer.
Yeah, it was way better, the conversation we had there. I was actually annoyed that song was so short.
Nat's slagging off one person in her life and I'm slagging off one person in my life. We're fucking proper going for it. It's like top trumps.
We are. Well, guess who?
But I think we're both in the right.
Yeah, I think
so, I do believe
too.
We're both in the right. And we both sort of had very similar experiences with it.
Mm.
Where does the point come?
I don't know where the point where you go, that's it.
Yeah.
It's done.
Because I'm also not averse, by the way, in my life, and my history speaks for itself, in killing something dead if it's upsetting me in real life.
No, I realise that. Yeah.
No matter how viable it is as a professional thing,
yeah,
I will kill it dead.
Yeah.
If it's upsetting me in real life,
I think that makes sense really, because you have to think about a situation. It could be a person, it could be a situation where you think, if I don't feel like this is helping me,
yeah,
or it might be helping you financially, but like mentally,
yeah,
or
there's no money in the world.
Then
you,
yeah, exactly. If you're just like, I'm not looking forward to this, and I don't feel happy when I'm doing this, or seeing
especially as well when we both work in, I'm speaking mainly for myself, but I don't know if this would actually apply to you.
Okay.
Wait,
I thought you were about to have a dig at me. I was like,
No, in terms of your attitude towards
it,
is we both work in like separately from the radio. So, take me out of the radio.
Yeah.
So you work in the radio,
yeah,
and I do my stuff that I do.
Yeah.
And I think there's an underlying goal towards all that, where you're like, I'm doing this because it's actually it's an enjoyable way to make a living.
Yeah.
So it's you know, it's quite a, you know, you're not a job that you hate.
No.
And when your job becomes something that you hate.
Yeah.
I think it's important to go, no, that's not part of why I do this.
To not have a job where I would wake up every morning and think, oh, God.
Well,
I've had that before,
You and I could make a shit ton more money by doing something that was, to us, soulless and not enjoyable.
Yeah.
So you take the rough with the smooth and you go, okay, well, I'll do this thing because it's enjoyable and I won't make as much money as someone who works in the city makes. Mm-hmm. But they...
Could you imagine us work in a suit with a briefcase
working
in the city?
I think we'd be brilliant.
Sell, buy. What they do, I watch Wall Street.
Well, that's your job. that's your job.
I like to work in the stock room, whatever it's called.
Can I be the boss?
Like Gordon Gekko from Wall Street.
I don't know what that is, but yeah.
Michael Douglas.
I've never seen it.
When I mean the stock room, I mean like where they do, not in the back, I mean back cupboard, I mean like out on the stocks.
Okay. Yeah, you do that. Because you'd be good at that because you're tall.
Yeah.
So but you'd like tower above everyone else. You'd be able to do all the John McCrick stuff.
John McCrick? Oh, didn't he?
Did he what?
I think he passed.
He did pass, yes.
Sorry, I will never show anyone.
No, he didn't pass, he died.
Oh, yeah, that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he died, yeah.
He's away, as you would
say. He is away, yeah.
He didn't do that. He wasn't stock. He was doing bookie stuff.
Yeah, but he did all that shit with your hands. That's what they do in the stocks.
3-2-1, didn't it? That's not what
he... No. Neither John McCrick nor the people in fucking Wall Street... are doing 3-2-1.
I get the idea.
They're doing stuff with their hands. Yeah,
that's not what they're doing in the. What's it not called? The stock room. What's it called? The floor. The room of shares.
They do all that, don't
share
they?
Share room. Oh, share room would be good.
Yeah, well, they do all that and they
do it. Do they? They just get on the phone to people and go sell.
Yeah, but they're doing stuff with their hands and all. Definitely.
I think I need to watch some more. I need to watch Wall Street.
Well, you do. If you're going to do it as a living, you definitely got to learn how to do it.
Okay.
And what I'll do, I'll be the boss. I mean, we're joint partners in this.
Okay, right? Yeah, cool.
But
cool.
But I am the face of the authority.
Sure.
Within the organisation.
Got it.
But we're 50-50 on financially.
That's actually perfect.
You're just doing the legwork. It's perfect because we're not in the same room.
Oh, yeah, it works really well.
So I'm in my big office.
Puppy on the window.
With my leather chair. Yeah. I'm like, pick the phone up every now and again and go, kill another puppy. So that sort of thing. So I'm there. Big cigar. Don't really like cigars, but I'm going to have one anyway.
Prop. It's
yeah,
prop.
It is, yeah.
Probably wear a waistcoat, I think. That's what you tend to do,
isn't it? Okay. So with my jacket off.
And sleeves rolled up on the shirt. Yep. Good look.
That's and then metal things, clips to sort of hold it up.
And
that
some,
sort of
what they call them, suspenders.
Or the braces,
they call them that.
Yeah. In America, they call them suspenders.
Are we doing this? Where's the UK version?
Can
of
my
Wall
stomach
Street?
Rumbling?
Yeah,
can you actually hear it? It's going mental.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
Where? That's all the money. You're thinking about the money.
Yeah, it's all that money. It's going to give you all that money, mate.
Where's the UK equivalent of Wall Street?
It'd be somewhere in the city, wouldn't it?
Like city, where do we just go to?
Liverpool Street.
Canary Wharf or something.
Yeah, Canary Wharf's good.
Canary Wharf.
Right, so I have an office at Canary. Would it be the top of Canary Wharf, our office?
It has to be, yeah.
What I would like in the office is when we work late, which hopefully we won't have to do, but
mm-hmm.
I guess
have
you,
to.
Yeah, I guess you sometimes
are the
have
financial
to.
Markets open at different times of the day?
Of course they are.
Of course
they are. When I'm sat back in my reclining leather chair and my big cigar on and my braces and my waistcoat with my feet up, just looking out over the city through the glass, I want there to be a sort of a strobing white light every now and again, which is the top of Canary Wharf, you know, the light on the top.
Yeah.
That's how high up we are.
Oh, wow.
Is that I can see that light is lighting up the frame of the window and stuff.
Okay.
That's how I imagine it.
That's good. Well, we do...
And I look down and go, oh, this city is mine.
That's what they do in a lot of films. They go, I run this town.
Yeah.
That's what they in a lot of the London gangstery films.
And a little meek secretary will come in. Like a little lad, will come in going, Mr. Bellsworth, I was just wondering if I could get off. And I'll be like, are those files all done in the correct order with all the data and that?
And they won't
be. No, but I'm going to do some of it at home. No. You will do it here, Perkins! Yeah.
And
I'll turn around and throw a mug at him.
Throw a mug at him, and then you'll throw around 50 new files, and they're like, sort those out!
Yeah.
That's what you'll do.
Yeah. Do you want to ask me again?
Yeah, Perkins knows better than that.
Yeah, stupid Perkins.
What we will also do...
Actually, let's call him Jacob.
Jacob Perkins.
Let's just call him Jacob. Okay. That's what I'm imagining.
Right, okay. Well, I feel like we need some like power lunches or some cocktails at the Shard. We'll be hanging out at the Shard all the time, won't we?
Yeah.
Let's go and have a White Russian at the Shard.
But I think we should complain about it whenever we're there. So we should sit there going, this is an eyesore. This is an awful building. I don't know why everyone thinks it's so great.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, I'm chucking 50s over the bar.
And dogs at the window.
There you go, buy yourself a new house.
Now, if a dog got impaled on a Shard window, that's going to be tricky, isn't it?
Really, really tricky.
No one's going to be able to get that.
I like that you brought that part from a previous story into this story.
I'm into it now. We haven't even had time to go while I'm tired, but we should get Reese Finlay into the studio.
So, all right, we're good. I mean, we should. No, we don't. We don't have to do that.
We're not slaves, I guess.
Power players, mate.
Right. That's true.
When I am good and ready, I will get Reese Finlay in the studio.
Okay. All right.
At the moment, we're having a powwow.
We are, powwow. But powwow.
The blue sky thinking,
good.
Yeah.
Where else can we go? Where's the Shard? There's other things over the Gherkins around there.
Yeah, let's go the Gherkin as well.
I've forgotten the other buildings that are near
McDonald's
there.
McDonald's is there,
but it's a nice one there.
Because we'd look good in there, wouldn't we? We'd like, everyone would like, who the fuck are these people?
Yeah, we come in like, designer clothes, I imagine.
Yeah, again, chucking 50s over the counter. Get me a hamburger.
Yeah.
This is too much. I don't know how much they are.
Keep the change.
Yeah.
They'll love us in there.
Yeah. Could do it like they do that thing when they...
Yeah.
How would you describe that? Because it's radio. When you have a flat
like,
palm and you
and
do it like
flicking
stroking.
Out the money.
Yeah. Do that in McDonald's. Oh, yeah. Give me 6 nuggets.
Do you know what I'll do? I'll go to McDonald's, get that much money. I'll go get me a Wimpy.
Yeah.
In McDonald's,
yeah. Here you go get me a Wimpy.
Exactly.
But we can't. All right, well, give me that £3,000 back then.
Right. You find a
Wimpy.
Find
me a fucking
find
Wimpy.
A Wimpy for that,
you're not telling
me
you can't cook a burger like a Wimpy, mate.
Exactly.
You're sacked. What do you mean you're not my boss? I could be.
Right. I've just
I could be.
You just
right,
bought
I'll
this
buy
McDonald's.
It. Yeah.
Right, I'm changing it into a Wimpy.
Yeah. This is Wimpy from now on.
Skipped.
You, get that M off your shirt.
That's true, here. Yeah.
It's a Wimpy. You, turn that M upside down.
All the way around,
yeah. It's a Wimpy now, this.
Oh, it's Wimpy.
Oh, get me a guest in.
Okay.
Get me a guest in.
Okay,
I'm up for this now. I'm up for this. Spanky Wilson.
I love that name. Spanky. It is a good name, that, isn't it?
I've never heard of Spanky Wilson.
No,
before.
Well, I like him. Yeah.
Who's Spanky Wilson? Tell
I don't
me
know.
About
I've
him.
Just heard that song, and I liked that cover of a Cream song.
Is it an olden day song? That it sounds olden days.
No, well, I think
sounds a bit Motown to me.
It does sound Motown. Yeah. But I thought Cream and Eric Clapton did it first. But now I'm wondering if they covered it. But I bet they. I think she covered Cream.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who can tell?
I love that story. Right, we're joined now by Reese Fenley's in the studio. Hello,
Reese. Hello, thank you for having me back.
It's a pleasure. I didn't even know you were coming in. I found out when I walked in this morning.
Listening to the show that Ian doesn't generally know before he comes in who the guests are.
I had no idea, mate. It's a lovely surprise.
Oh, thank you.
And we're talking about reaffirmation, coming to terms with an autism diagnosis, which is your latest graphic novel. So last time you were in, it was the High Priestess, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was a lot of chat about the Blue Flame, and then we moved on to autism, and I think that's when the seeds started to get sowed.
Yeah. So I did your quote for the book and that sort of thing, and I've not read the whole thing yet, but I've read chunks. I was just slagging you off, mate.
Oh, okay,
know.
Fine. great.
But I've not read the whole thing yet in its entirety, but I've read chunks of it, and I'm always, rocked a little bit by your honesty within your work. I'm also occasionally concerned about it. So there's an occasional thing where I go, oh, is that healthy for you, for Reese? Or, I'm sure it's helpful for other people, but is that healthy for you? But we can come on to that. That's just that's my caveat within it. But I think I find it quite striking how brutally, and I found the same with The High Priestess, how brutally honest you are about your own personal life. Because they're all kind of autobiographical, really, aren't they?
You wrote what you know.
Yeah.
So even if it's fiction, it's going to have these this emotional core of, things that have happened to me.
And you're a character within your own books as well.
Except for The High Priestess, that is completely fictional. But I think a lot of the emotional themes come from a real place. But this is completely autobiographical. And not just comics as well, it becomes an actual novella as well merged in.
Yeah.
That's a huge new thing for me as well. I've never really written properly before. And then that gets even deeper because I think with comics, you can handle the emotional core and maybe some of the more lighthearted moments.
Yep.
But to get deep into, especially with something like autism, which is such a minefield to talk about.
I find when I read comics, when there's a bit of, because Watchmen does it a little bit as well, as I recall.
Them. Yeah.
Well, not skip over them, but I get some go, oh, for fuck's sake. Like, do you know what I mean? It's there's a lot. So basically, it's where the comic is broken up by prose.
Okay.
So there's writing, and then you're back to the graphic.
I'm not sure if you like that.
Well, you have to be in a certain mood, is what I'm going on to say.
Yeah.
So if you are completely submerged in the comic, and if you're thoroughly enjoying the journey and that, and you've got the time, it's a brilliant thing. It's a really enriching part of it to go between mediums. But if you're like just skipping through something, it's like, oh, fuck this.
Yeah, I can definitely apologize. Alan, I think it was Voice of the Fire when he wrote that.
Okay,
the first chapter is complete nonsense, really wordy stuff. And that's to keep the cunts out, is what he said.
Is that what it is? Yeah, is that what that is? Yeah.
Not that I'm saying I'm trying to keep the cunts out.
No, I hear you though. Yeah.
It was just a case of, with autism, there's so much complications and the way you'll get attacked on Twitter just for a certain choice of wording, and it's
happen?
Yeah, it's well, like with any movement. So neurodiversity is the new big word.
Yeah,
and it's about kind of rights, and not just autism, any sort of neurological condition that's beyond the norm.
I guess one of the problems is that unless you take the tack of going, I am going to assume that everyone has Asperger's, or I assume everyone is autistic in some way, then it breaks down regular human interaction. So, what has been neurotypical human interaction thus far, it's now the rule book has been completely rewritten. So I think there needs to be a degree of understanding on both sides. The problem that you have is that one side of it can't necessarily understand, that sort of, or not understand, relate. They can't relate to an emotional response to something. There's a very similar thing going on with this, with the Greta girl as well.
This is what's really brought autism into the topic of conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, the stuff that's being said about her in the media. Mm. That,
yeah.
One, that it's a mental illness, which is a really horrific thing to say.
Yeah.
There's one I read that she's manipulative because she's autistic.
Right. Yep.
16-year-old child, and she's autistic.
But autism shares a lot of traits with manipulative, with somebody who's being...
As does being neurotypical.
Yeah,
this is the exact problem we've got.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's become this us versus them.
Yeah.
And as great as neurodiversity is, when you start putting this divide in, there's a divide.
Yeah.
And I think the reality is, I think someone with autism or any sort of disability or any sort of condition
yeah.
have more in common with the rest of the human race than
differences. Yeah, but malicious manipulation would be something that would be called out in someone who's neurotypical.
Yeah.
Right? So if people don't understand yet that someone who's autistic can appear to be maliciously manipulative as just part of what they are. It's not, that's not what they're doing. They're not having a second. They're not thinking, oh, I'll do that. But it can appear to be that.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you like, the rest of the world is trying to catch up. And some of them are just refusing to catch up.
Yeah.
And I think that the situation with the girl, Greta, I can't remember her second name, I'm sorry.
Thunberg?
I think it's like pronounced Thunberg, but I think you need an accent to do it properly.
I absolutely understand why people would find her objectionable. Yeah. I get it.
Because it's trying to work out what her motivations truly are. Because it's not
is
money.
Her age and, as
I
get, well,
I think that comes into it. I think there's lots of things come into it where I can go, I understand why someone will go, she gets my fucking tits, that one, you know, that girl. But at the same time, what I can't understand is the need to voice that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bit that I struggle with. I can't understand why.
And on social media.
And to her.
Yeah, true. Yeah, very true.
But look how well she's dealt with it when the president said something about her and she changed her Twitter bio to what he said.
Did she?
Yeah,
right.
Trump said that on the thing on her profile, and I was a quote that Trump said about her, which she embraced it, and I like that. It's funny. Yeah. It's good that she did that.
But it's you know, the counter argument that I keep hearing is she's a 16-year-old autistic kid. It's like, I couldn't give a fuck, was she? That's not acceptable to be like that to anyone.
Right, it's that kind of faux concern, like, oh, she shouldn't be doing that. Oh, where are her parents? Her parents have done this to
her. No, I mean, the criticism is what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, this is the criticism being levelled. It's that she's somehow being manipulated.
By her parents, because her mum, I read, you know, her mum was in Eurovision or something like that, so the implication is that she's pushing her as a showbiz child. But what she's doing is not the way that you'd go as most showbiz kids go.
But what I was meaning is that the argument back to the criticism of her is like, you're a grown man, which is normally the situation. You're a grown man having a go at a 16-year-old autistic girl, and it's like, no, that's a diversion.
Right.
It should be, you are a human being addressing another human being like that.
With and she's got legitimate issues. Like Clarkson.
It's not worse.
Clarkson had a go at the weekend.
He called her a spoiled brat.
Right. This is the guy that punched up somebody because he didn't have a hot dinner, right? That was brought to him. When Jeremy Clarkson got in a fight somewhere, as the producer said, they didn't have any hot food at where he was.
Yeah.
Now, come on now, you haven't got any room to talk when...
So this is what we're dealing with, I guess, in terms of when you're broaching that.
And I hate the term stigma, but it's definitely it's been evident with Greta that it attracts a stigma and if I go, oh, I've done a book, you get a little pat on the head, oh, bless you.
And then
it takes someone to actually like read the previews and stuff to go, oh, actually, this is competent.
It's an actual book. Yeah.
And I've had people like directly say that, like, oh, I thought this was just going to be absolute nonsense.
But where they're essentially treating it like, oh, look, you've coloured in all the lines a lot. Look at that. You've done really, really well.
Put it on the fringe of a magnet.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, isn't it? But I think, I don't know, I worry a little bit about that everyone's on the same page with this stuff, and they're clearly not at the moment. So I have I don't level this at you, by the way, but I have a real difficulty when people are, for want of a better word, activists for a certain cause, that it occasionally becomes objectionable too easily. So it's occasionally, you know, where people are like, I'm sick of you fucking banging on about your Asperger's. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it becomes the brand, and I hate it myself, and it's exhausting. But it's, I mean, you have it yourself. If you talk about the rugby on Twitter, you lose followers, and this is me. If I want to talk about video games or...
That Ian talks too much about rugby on Twitter.
There's this expectation to be on brand, otherwise you lose.
Yeah, you do that a little
bit. If I talk about something that I like in my life on my Twitter,
which is fine,
however much I want to.
Yeah, which is what you can do.
That people are like, oh, this isn't...
Has anyone said that to you on Twitter?
Well, this isn't Naughty Keith.
Oh, really?
No, you know what I mean?
Rugby again?
Well, no, but luckily, I'm not in a situation where...
Sorry, I stopped doing that.
But I couldn't give two fucks.
Yeah, it's this kind of expectation that they want people in, you know, in the social media world, you know, I follow in, I want jokes, not I want a three-dimensional
they're
character.
They're not getting
I just
that.
Want this that
one
is just
note.
What I tweet
They're not getting jokes.
Sometimes that tweet's ready to go. I want jokes. That's all I tweet you.
Yeah, not getting them, mate.
But then imagine me making jokes in a... You know, in a community where jokes aren't always interpreted as jokes.
Yeah.
No,
if anyone wants proper content, mate, they can pay for it and go on my Patreon, mate. Then I'm not getting it free.
Do loads of jokes there, don't you?
Oh, mate, it's hilarious.
Full of content, Parapod tickets. Sold out. Amazing.
All that stuff. All that sort of stuff, mate.
So highly recommended.
Yeah.
There you go. We've done our plug.
Right, let's promote your thing now.
Gift as well, pages? If we want to do some...
What have you got?
We'll do some gifts.
Yeah, let's do gifts.
Well, so last time I was in, I brought you some sketch cards.
Oh, yeah, you did. They were lovely.
Somewhere, so Ian had a nice little trading card size one, and to draw it into scale and to contribute to the culture of bullying going on here, I made yours to scale, which was twice the size.
Made it to scale.
It's very nice. Mine was on my old one's on my dartboard next door.
Yeah, so the picture of Nat
dartboard.
was
the
over.
Dartboard, where I pinned my favourite things.
Put loads of things on.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, Nat's trading card. I got one trading card, and Nat got two because it was to scale.
Right. I need to sage my dartboard. Can I point out that I do love Nick Knowles, and I put a laminated picture of him on my dartboard.
Right.
Things started going wrong, various things. I've had to get rid of it.
Curse of Knowles.
Yeah, I think he did curse.
Okay, to get back on track. Have you forgiven me for that mild transgression?
I love it. Yeah, no, I
okay,
liked
perfect.
It.
Yeah. So I don't want to reopen old wounds, rather than make new wounds.
Yeah, please.
Today's the day for any wounds.
Fresh slice. Do a fresh slice, Reese.
Yeah.
Firstly, we'll get the corn out of it. Ian, I thought you'd get a kick out of these. Some Batman 89 original
Heavens.
Trading cards.
Heavens to Betsy.
Complete with 20-year-old chewing gum, if you want to try some of that.
Oh,
yeah,
what do
it.
I do? That is a quandary for me.
Don't know. Open one.
No, you know, I desperately want to open them. Well, desperately. But
then you want to leave them sealed for collectors.
They're amazing, man. They're fantastic. It's the Tim Burton Batman when they did the trading cards. And it's got the gum in. And even as I'm feeling it, I'm like, oh, I'd love some of that gum now.
It's rock hard. It's amazing. Yeah. I had some from Gremlins too, so it's a little bit fresher.
Is it the pink gum that you used to get in the
I'm not going to open them for now, because I think I've got some of them trading cards anyway. It'd be awful to open them and then find the ones I've already got. And I'm just...
Reese, have you brought something in for me? What a surprise for
me. Because when we were booking me in, Matt's email was, I look forward to you bringing some.
I did say that. I've already confessed to that on this show. I've already mentioned it.
Obviously, artists love it when you ask for free artwork.
Yeah.
I thought you were just
going to
do
it with
a napkin. What is...
Natalie King.
Oh, my God. That is me. Scale, Ian might say.
Can we put this to auction? Because I'll put money down for that now.
Holding a car, which I assume I'm about to eat. My lunch.
Amazing.
General chaos.
And there's some people there trying to run away, I think, because they see what's happening.
It's kind of sexy, that as well.
That
look how sexy you are in that.
Actually.
Look at the, you see a bit of thigh and stuff. Look at that.
Yeah, that's really good, Reese. Thank you.
It's got a lot going on for
now, me. Where on the dark web did you find this picture of me?
On the dark web.
This is where you sit. I need to know what
that's
website
amazing.
It's on. That's amazing, Reese. Thank you
Let's
very much.
Let's take a picture of that and get it tweeted now.
Okay.
As in when the show's on.
Okay, sure. We'll
how
hold
wonderful.
It. You hold it too. That's nice. I love it, actually.
Hold it, mate. I'll have to hold it one hand.
Oh, that's definitely going on my wall. Thank you so much. This is even more than I thought you were going to bring in, which I thought was going to be on a napkin from in the green room.
Oh, no, being a recurring guest, I want to earn friend of the show status.
Yeah, yeah. No, you got it already. You already got it.
Look, I already wrote it on the screen.
With that in mind, Nat, can you book Roger Langridge on again? See if he gives me another drawing.
Yeah, we'll do. Okay, friend of the show, Roger.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Let's get back to reaffirmation. So I'm always intrigued by how the business works, how the actual business side of it works. Because, you know, when you wrote to me the other week and you sent me the copy of it through and said, oh, well, it's going to print and this. And you did the trading cards with the last one and, you know, I drew a trading card for you and there was all that sort of stuff. And I'm always intrigued as to how does the financial aspects of that work?
Initially, I wanted this to go to, like, a traditional publishing thing.
Did you? Okay.
And we're actually in talks with Unbound to do it.
Okay,
and they're,
good
they're
call.
Great. It's a great merge of... crowdfunding, which I'm familiar with, and traditional publishing.
Yeah.
But the timing didn't quite work out.
Okay.
So when I wanted it out this year.
Right, okay.
Because I feel, you know how, like, there's that spate of, like, so many mental health books and stuff at the moment. I think neurodiversity is going to be the next one.
Yeah.
It's going to be the next big fad.
That's plausible.
And
yeah.
I want to be at the vanguard of that.
Okay.
So I think it had to come out this year. Right. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to do this Kickstarter. Set the target modestly.
Okay.
So it could fund an okay release, but then hope that it goes beyond that.
Yeah.
So we set the target of $2,000, which is enough to print it, get it to everyone, and a few independent bookstores and stuff.
And do you have, is your audience, do they easily cover that? In terms of people that would look forward
my
to a new book
from
you? My
audience would not have done that. They covered the High Priestess one, which is about 800.
Right.
But I needed a bigger audience for this, because I want a bigger audience for this.
Yeah.
It needs a bigger audience.
Yeah.
There's so many books about autism in children, and books for parents of children with autism, but for adults, maybe one or two easily accessible books.
Yeah.
So it needs mine, and it needs
mainly mine.
Mine's the first one out, so you might as well get that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's this. I saw a gap in the market for once, which is a new thing for me.
But okay, so out of the business side of it, and out of, you know, that sort of you know, the thought of that and how you're going to do that. I presume there was also an inherent need within you to express this, because it was a relatively recent thing, your autism diagnosis, wasn't it?
Yeah, so when I saw you, it was like 3 months fresh when I was on here.
And it was quite clear when I spoke to you that there was an element of that you were like trying to get your head around that.
Yeah, it was massive. I mean, I was on a waiting list for a year to get the diagnosis.
Yeah, it's very difficult, isn't it?
In that year, I researched the condition and understood that I've probably got it.
Yeah.
And it's not going to change anything. But the second I got that diagnosis, suddenly I felt my thoughts were worthless, my opinions suddenly had no value because of this autism on the brain.
It's an odd thing, that, isn't it? Because I wonder... I think I know several people in my life who are undiagnosed autistic, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm relatively confident on at least two of them.
Right, but would
who I'm close to, people I'm close to in my real life.
And have you mentioned this to them, or would you not mention
it? It's been discussed. It's certainly been discussed. However, I'm not sure. They seem to be, in a serious discussion, right, when you're not just pissing about on that, in a serious discussion, they're taking it as being, I sort of don't want to know. I don't need to know.
Okay.
Yet there are other people in my life who are diagnosed autistic who would say it's the best thing they ever did. So it was absolutely essential to be.
I guess that's the question if you're seeking diagnosis, is would it benefit your life to have that diagnosis terms of medical support?
Again, because I'm always looking for the little caveat of, you know, cynicism within that.
I remember you mentioning once on the Cabin Fever podcast that, you know, if you seek out a diagnosis and you chase it hard enough, you're probably going to
get
it.
One,
and that seems to be a common theme.
From what I understand, and this, I by no means say this is definitive, this is just from what I've collated together from what people have said to me who have experience of the system. If you go for a private autism diagnosis, not an NHS one, which most people end up doing a private diagnosis because the NHS waiting list is so long. If you go for a private diagnosis, you are very likely to get a diagnosis of autism.
Oh, and why is that?
I've no idea. I don't know. Okay. I don't know what that means. I don't know what. But that's certainly what's been fed back to me from, you know, I guess there must be stats that say that more people who go private get it. Now, that doesn't take into account that most people who are seeking an autism diagnosis are going because they think they have autism.
Yeah, true.
So they probably, or they maybe more than likely have.
I'd say confirmation bias probably comes into play. And then
perhaps, yeah, totally.
They're only looking at the signs that someone is autistic and ignoring all the facts.
But it's a pretty thorough testing process, though, isn't it? Do you not think?
What did I have? I had like 2 one-to-one sessions. And they ring someone who knew you as a child.
So
And then they kind of collate all that information.
Right.
But with me, on the first session, she was like, you're definitely not autistic. And then by the second, she's like, you definitely are.
Right.
Because I can put on a good front.
Right.
Yeah.
So can I ask, did you go looking for the diagnosis because you thought that you were, or because someone had suggested to you
it
that
was
you
suggested
might be?
During the midst of a mental health crisis by the GP, and then the referral goes through, but then it's a 1-year wait, which is, you're effectively in limbo for that time. That's a long time.
It is a long time, yeah.
And I wonder if there's so did you have any element to you which was that felt everything would be all right if you got the diagnosis, or everything would be all right if you didn't get the diagnosis?
No.
Or were you just literally under the thumb of the GP? He was just like, go and do it.
I think I was under the thumb of everyone at the time, because I kind of lost control of my life.
Yeah.
And had to rebuild it.
Yeah.
And that's what the book's been good for. I know you mentioned it being worrying, but I think this whole journey...
Oh, don't focus on that part of what I said, because that's a very minor thing within it.
It comes up a lot. Yeah. And the two things that come up a lot are you okay? And I might be autistic after reading the book, and then should I get tested? And then the same question comes up, do you think it would benefit your life?
Yeah.
And I think
I worry about anyone who's sharing their private life, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, I know firsthand how that can affect you.
And again, the question that comes up is putting that out there the good thing to do, or is it going to put me in danger?
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of candid stuff in there. I mean, there's the chapter about I've had 2 years of online harassment from an individual, and I've been quite private about that until now.
Yeah.
And it was like, is this going to open the door for more?
Mm.
Mm.
And then the reality is, if I don't talk about it, it's still going to happen. So
I
might as well just wear it. And it's, I don't know, I feel, on one hand, it's kind of sleazy to be turning all this negative stuff into a financial game for me. But then at the same time, it's also all of this horrible stuff that's happened. And
well, one of the...
It's become... worth something now.
Understood, yeah. But one of the beauties, I think, of a product that's related to your personal life, and again, I'm relating this back to myself because it's all I know, from the Mental podcast, is that once that was completed, and then I toyed with doing a second series, and then I started making a second series, and I was like, this is actually literally doing my head in there. You know, it's horrible, this is. So I backed out of it. But I did feel... that having that finished product, and this I would imagine would relate to, you know, anything created book that's a finished product, is that I was like, okay, I can park that now because I've done that and that exists now, that will continue to exist over there, but I don't have to be directly engaged with the process of relaying this to other people. So I can just go, right, that's there, that's there. I've got to get on my life now. If that helps you, that helps you. If it doesn't help you, it doesn't help you. You know, if you like it, you like it, you don't, you don't. But it's just over there. And I think there's a way of sort of funneling that sort of stuff out of you. I mean, yeah, you can't funnel autism out of you, but you know what I mean? It is that you're dealing with it, not the autism itself, your actual dealing of it, and you're addressing that situation.
But in a way, it is dealing with the autism itself, because when you're looking back in retrospect, working out, oh, these big parts of my childhood show that I'm autistic.
Absolutely, but your process of doing that and your process of coming to terms with it, as it's called,
flushing out of the system,
is there.
And, you know, I thought the coming to terms of it would be a case of learning to go back to the way I was, and then the reality of it is, spoilers for the book, you're never going to go back to where you were, because where you were, you didn't know you were autistic. Mm. You're acting like a normal person in a world that doesn't see the world the same way as you.
Yeah,
I like the comparison that it's a different computer system. So normal people are Windows, autistic people are a Mac, or I'm like a weird Linux thing that only plays Minesweeper.
I totally get that.
I like the idea of it as a personal approach. Same way, like, I was so drawn to the Mental podcast and I wouldn't touch any of the Mental Health media, is because it was personal. The problem with a lot of the autism books aimed at adults is they're formatted as a guide.
Yeah.
And I find that incredibly dangerous.
Well, also a career path, which I wouldn't have wanted to take either. You know, the fact that there are people who their very existence as artistic creators becomes about, you know, ultimately about their own problems, which is fine. And I would always contest, you can't do it if it's as genuine.
No, you have to escalate it. And I've seen this so many times on Twitter.
You can't do it,
There's these, like, autistic influencers will start off with, you know, kind of basic relaying information, discussing issues of it, and then they just get more and more extreme and dramatic to hold on to the audience.
Totally that.
And then that's how you end up with these, you know, the Alex Jones right wing.
Which is what's happened in mental health. You know, in terms of traditional mental health, that's what's happened in that. Is it's like now it's you can't keep the quids coming in.
You've hit the tipping point, it's oversaturated, and we're talking too much about it, maybe.
Yeah.
Arguably. Probably not, but I think there's an interesting discussion to be had about it.
I think yes, personally.
Yeah.
And I feel all right saying that because I'm part of the crew. You know what I mean? So I feel all right going, no, this is now. This is too much. And it's become something I've mentioned on here many times. I've mentioned it on Patreon and things like that. Many times we've discussed this. You fetishize it and it becomes something that is a viable career plan.
Yeah. And I wasn't comfortable writing about the mental health, but it obviously was an essential part.
Yeah.
So it kind of all gets out of the way in the first act of the book and then
move on to. But I've never felt with your work, the stuff that I've seen of your work, I've never felt at all. Bizarrely, I've never felt it self-indulgent, which is quite weird, given that
I guess
by definition it really is.
The point of candidness to the I'm not self-absorbed enough to think that my view is the definitive view.
Yeah,
like you know, this book isn't going to be the definitive book on autism, but it's going to be an important contribution to that conversation.
Yeah, understood.
Because I think, you know, while mental health, we've managed to get past the point where stigmas aren't a massive thing anymore.
Yeah,
with neurodiversity, as we've seen with, you know, Greta in the media. You get absolutely decimated for.
But do you not think there's an element of that there are certain people that work within these, let's call them social media industries. So people, again, nameless people who.
I guess influencers, is that?
Well, yeah, I don't really know what that means in terms of. You know what I mean? But people who, their online personalities, I guess, yes, influencers, who their online personality is constantly talking about one thing.
Yeah.
So, which there are many of with mental health.
Yeah. Now, so you've got to stay on brand, you've got to.
Totally that. I've long since contested, you simply would not be able to do that if you have the problems you say you have.
Yeah.
Like you wouldn't, you'd be dead by now. Because if you were reminded and having to remind yourself on a daily basis and consume yourself, I don't mean this about autism, I mean about mental health.
No,
consume yourself. We're constantly talking about suicide, constantly talking about mental health, constantly talking about meds, constantly, you know, all the time. And you've got to do it, essentially, it seems 24/7, really, online. It would blow you up if you really were, if your issues were what you say they are, you couldn't physically do those things. Yeah. That off, you would lose weeks. There would definitely be times you couldn't do it. So I'm always slightly suspicious.
Yeah, it's the audience that want that extremity, and this is the problem. It escalates, and you do end up with these damaging things. And this is the main concern about formatting anything as a guide.
Yeah,
and I think it mentions about four times in the book, but this isn't a guide. Don't see it as a guide.
Yeah,
if you can relate to it, brilliant. But I'm not telling you what to do because mental health as well as autism, they're both such broad subjects, and there's so many different factors.
Of course, yeah, of course.
As well as, you know, circumstance and surroundings and everything.
Yeah.
To tell someone what to do in that situation, it's either pointless on a good day or really dangerous on a bad day.
Yeah.
So I really want to stray away from
it's
that.
It's a complicated thing, but what I'll say, though, like, and genuinely again, I think when I wrote the quote for you about, which was kind of about just your work generally, because I hadn't read the full book at that point when I did the quote, but my feeling with it was, that was, I think when I sent it to you, I said, this is absolutely sincere. I genuinely mean this. This is a, you know, I've not just done you a quote.
Oh, it was an incredible quote as well.
But it was genuinely sincere, as I do feel that. And I think, you know, from the little kind of really that I know about you, you seem to have a handle on stuff. And I know that you wobble, and I know that you have moments of, like, where it gets too much and all that sort of thing. But I think everybody does that.
I think it's, to a degree, it's projecting success and confidence, but not in a fake it till you make it way, just in a kind of, this is what the situation necessitates.
I think the fact that the work exists is all the clarification you need that you're capable.
I suppose.
Well, it is.
Yeah, I guess. And
no, that's unarguable.
I mean, like, late last night we hit the 100% mark on the Kickstarter.
There we go.
Great.
So funded within the first weekend.
So this interview is pointless.
Yeah. I just wanted to bully Nat a bit more. Yeah.
Hey, don't
came
see
to London.
Have you signed this somewhere?
Yes.
Look at her. She's
sorry,
all
I need
over
to.
It.
Oh, yeah, there we go. There we go.
Make sure it's an original.
Get the artist to sign it.
Well, look, man, thank you so much for coming
Wonderful.
In. Wonderful. Really
have you
appreciate
my song?
It. I have, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah,
so we can all rise for the national anthem.
You ruined it, though, because I was just going to kick into it. But there you go.
Oh, because I've been chaperoned by an Irish woman to negate London.
Okay.
The book will show you how I feel about London. So.
Well, I think it's how we all feel about London, Reece.
So that's all right. So that's fun.
It's an absolute shit tip. Cheers, Reece. Thanks a lot, man. Some people say I look like my dad. Oh, all that shouting has made me want to do a double play, and also because something is going on in the studio. So let's do a double play. We've had Bewitched. Now let's have Shirley Bassey. Shirley Bassey, Jezahel. I tell you what, I'm a big fan of a horn section.
Yeah, me too. I love it.
Really, really am.
Yeah.
In fact, I think that's why I like the Blues Brothers so much.
But interestingly, not Mark Ronson. He loves a horn section.
Well,
too.
I'm just not familiar with Mark Ronson's stuff. But I love all the old soul stuff that the Blues Brothers cover.
Yeah, yeah.
But I really like it. I was going to say upgraded. It's not upgraded, but it's reformatted with a horn section.
Oh, no.
I really
a
love
horn
that.
Horn adds a lot to a song.
Yeah,
I
really
think.
Love it. Really love it. So that's a bit of chat about the horn. We're now joined by Otis Menza. Hey, Otis.
Hello, thank you for having me.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. Can I just say what a pleasure it is? Thank you for coming in. I do appreciate that. And
no, likewise.
I say that because we're both very aware. My producer was very rude to you just now.
What? Excuse me? I was not.
All is forgiven. All is forgiven.
But that was fucking proper rude, though.
No,
you know,
did I not give you a hug, Otis?
You did give me a hug.
After I called you out, you went to the room and went, Otis, in the studio,
that
now.
That's not how I said it. I said, look, Otis, come into the
look,
studio.
Look, I'm from Yorkshire. We've got a hard, hard head.
That doesn't,
like that
doesn't.
Okay. Don't worry.
Being from Yorkshire doesn't excuse these things. The fact that you're from a place that's traditionally, you know, far more manners-led place and right. a warmer place in terms of, obviously not in terms of temperature, but in terms of, you know, the way people are with each other, that doesn't mean you should accept
my apologies,
London shittiness.
It's all taken.
Whereabouts are you from in Yorkshire?
I'm from Sheffield, so South Yorkshire.
Nice, yeah. Okay, yeah, mm-hmm. nice. Whereabouts is Sheffield, though?
So Norfolk Park. Well, nice. I live in Norfolk Park now. I grew up around Aberdale area.
Okay.
But yeah, I moved down south to study music and then moved back home. And when I got home, everyone had moved to Norfolk Park. So
right.
We moved to Norfolk Park. And it's nice being near the park there. It's like the trees allow me to get some thinking time in, you know,
yeah,
some contemplation.
I get that. Yeah. It's I think Yorkshire, like generally, and it's a generalisation because there are some shit tips in Yorkshire. But generally speaking, I understand the lure of the north back.
Okay.
So I'm from the northwest. I'm from Lancashire, technically Cheshire, because I was born in Warrington, but I always say I'm from St Helens because I follow Saints in the rugby. But I feel the lure of the north. Like I really do. And the more time I spend up there, and I do spend a lot of time in the north really nowadays for various reasons, you know, work stuff and that, and the rugby and all that sort of thing, I feel more settled the further away from the south that I actually am.
Perhaps I think it could be argued just because of the busyness of London. I mean, I don't know how to talk about the rest of the south, but in the sense of London, there's of course a lot of stimulation, a lot of things going on all at once, and I guess it's just slower. down Sheffield, you know. So I feel that gives more space for community, gives more space for, I guess, greenery. Like there's more green, there's more space.
Do you mean less people? What do you mean by slower? Because I'm not from the north and I need to know what's good about this park that you've
She won't understand slower because she's probably about as slow as London gets
what
now.
What do you mean by slower?
So,
less people?
Well, one, less people, but also life is cheaper. So I'm not saying that there aren't people struggling. There's definitely people struggling. Yeah. And there's definitely people that are on the poverty line, under the poverty line. Mm-hmm. However, there seems to be less of a pace, a speedy pace and a speedy rush. Mm-hmm. And I feel, in some extent, it's like being in the centre of London, you really feel a sort of capitalist sort of oppression, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, until you get out of that, you don't really get that freedom. So it's like, when I'm visiting London in the centre, I feel it.
Yeah.
In Sheffield, it's there, but I feel it way less, you know, just because there's it's more laid back, you know?
Mm. Yeah. It's I think the word stimulation is very is strong and potent in that. I certainly feel that in London. The second that I'm on the tube, second my train pulls in and I'm on the tube, second I walk out of Euston, it's like, holy fuck. And it's like, it's coming from all sides. And you know that I live
busy.
A very rural life anyway,
you
so
do,
I'm out of the way.
I mean, it's in its vein. It's the capital city, you know? So I don't expect anything less of that busyness, you know?
Yeah. But Reese, who was just in, Reese Finley, the artist who was just in, he's done a lot of work about his recent autism diagnosis. And I know for Reese, I know in that book, in Reaffirmation, in that book, it very much deals with the experience for him of coming to London.
Yeah.
And how, you know.
It's very busy if you're going from a slightly slower pace to, you're quite right, everyone's running off trains.
Yeah.
If you come out at a big station, then it's full of people no matter what time of day.
There's not many corners.
Really.
There's not many bits where you can actually tuck yourself away.
Very true, actually, yeah.
I think that's the beautiful thing about Sheffield. I was very bitter for a while growing up in Sheffield because, of course, I was allured by the busyness of London and just the fact that I saw myself represented in the music scene, in the art scene, and I didn't feel like there was anything there in Sheffield for me. But it took me going down south, perhaps spending a little bit more time in London, you know, travelling from, I studied in Guildford, so travelling from London to Guildford, spending more time and then going back and sort of rediscovered that there are things, there are pockets of talent and culture and art, but there's more space and it takes more discovery, it takes more work to dig those things out, but there are gems, you know.
And of course, if you want a torrent of cunts, you could just go to Meadowhall.
Exactly.
Meadowhall? What is Meadowhall?
So we call it Meadowhell.
Meadowhell,
is that in Sheffield?
Yeah, that is in Sheffield.
It's a big, big shopping centre.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You can see it from the motorway, from the M1, it's there, it's all lit up, it's all green glass and stuff. It's lovely, it's just
a lot of people.
Population.
That's
the issue of it, you know, it really is.
Yeah.
And I think that can sometimes, for people that don't know, that can taint Sheffield, I think, sometimes.
Yeah,
if
definitely.
People think, if that's their experience of Sheffield, I'm not going, Sheffield, it's horrible. It's like, no, Sheffield is lovely.
Yeah.
It's just got this fucking horrible thing in the middle of it, which is the centre point to where people go. But
I mean, I guess in terms of putting us on the map, Meadowhall, sadly, somehow it works in our favour in that realm, you know.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I'm sure it feeds into the economy and stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it's like, it's never not busy. I've never been there when it's been anything less than looking like the week before Christmas. But anyway, that's by the by. We're talking about, now, is it Rap Poetics?
No,
it is Rap Poetics,
okay.
Yeah.
You have to check now.
I kind of knew that it was.
Nat thought she'd written it down wrong.
I thought, I've misspelled politics. And I was like, no, it's poetics, right.
I'm often confusing words, politics, poetics, so that's okay.
Thank you.
It's an EP.
It is an EP,
Now, what does EP mean nowadays?
I don't really know what EP means. I guess I redefine it, it's just not an album, you know.
Right.
It's a piece of work that I care very much about. It not being an album doesn't devalue it in any way.
Okay.
But it's just, I wouldn't consider it, I see an album as something that needs to play more into a bigger concept and perhaps have more content. So this has less content, and there is a concept there, though perhaps the concept is overarching and slightly broader, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
And what's your approach? So when you set out to create a piece like this, is your... Do you assess that at the end? Do you go, okay, that's an EP, that's not an album? Or is that in your process to actually make it, you go, no, I'm making an EP?
Well, I think for, like, in any, like, creative realm, the person doing the creating doesn't really care too much about the label, whether it's an album, mixtape, EP, or, you know, single. I think it's just for the outer world. It's just for the perhaps the industry and whoever's listening to the music. I don't really consider it whether it's an EP or not, or whether it's an album or not, until it comes time to having to put it out there. During the creative process, it's all just words, it's all just art, it's all just music, you know?
I do you know what? I actually think there's a modern trend. I believe it's a modern trend anyway, where certain artists do think about that beforehand and do think about that nowadays. And I think it's to the detriment of art as well. You know, when you're actually thinking, well, I'm going to do this with it, and then it's going to be this, and then it's this, and then, you know, so it actually hinders your creativity.
I fell victim to that many times. Yeah, you know,
it's easy to do that.
You get caught up in the chase of, you know, oh, why is my song not on this blog? Or why is my song not being covered by this radio? And then, you sort of have to manipulate yourself into doing certain things, which is always a dangerous place to be. So I always have to steer 180 and remind myself the reason I'm doing this is for the love of the art and it's for, you know, catharsis.
Yeah, so where did that come from? So in terms of your journey, how old are you, do you mind asking?
I'm 24.
Okay, so
I had to think then, I couldn't remember.
I had to think of my age the other day, but it's far more plausible for me, even though I am also 24. In terms of your how this journey began for you, when you said then, you know, I do it for the love of the art and all that sort of stuff. So where did that come from in you? Where is that something from infant age? Is that something that's always been there, or is it something that has developed as you've got into maturity where you've gone, no, actually, I think this is my calling?
Yeah, I don't think it was always in me, though I'm in a deterministic way. You know, I feel I had the right conditioning. So my dad was a hip-hop DJ, in the 90s on pirate radio. My mum has always been interested in poetry. She's a poet herself.
This is well mapped out.
yeah, exactly.
How can you possibly say, well, I don't feel like that way? Of course it fucking was.
Yeah, I have no free will in this at all.
Mum and your dad have made you, and you're both.
exactly. I just feel that on a subconscious level, that has obviously had its toll on me. But I think, you know, just being a teenager looking for an outlet of sorts, and being from the UK, it was sort of natural for me to and the age I was, natural for me to get into grime music. Mm. And, you know, that was fun, and I appreciate grime for what it is for the UK. And but for me, I think it, past it being a sort of fun for the art, you know, I sort of saw myself reach its limits, and I wanted to find a way that I could express my, I guess, the vulnerabilities that I was experiencing, and just the deeper things, perhaps the depression I was going through, or the anxiety I felt, or just my issues with society. And I felt like I was doing a lot of pretending as a teenager. So I felt like I needed a home where I could be honest. And for me, that home became hip hop culture and poetry, you know?
Mm. Do you have rules? Like, do you have your own set of, do you have I'm always interested in this, because I think, from my experience in comedy, when I worked in, you know, doing stand-up and stuff, or when I worked doing sketch stuff, the thing that every collaboration had in common was, it began with, what are we? What are we? What will we do and won't we do? And what, it was always, that was always an underlying thing to it. What path will we take? What opportunities will we ignore? What opportunities will we thrive on? You know, that's it. And I think, and I guess at a young age as well, you kind of go, well, I wouldn't do an advert, and I don't want it. I never want that. You know, mm-hmm. I guess for musicians it'd be, I never want my music used to sell banks, or I never, you know, you'd have those sort of things, those sort of grand ideas yourself. But do you have a set like that?
I think I've developed it. I think less of a sort of concrete rule, but more of a sort of, I guess, mantra is, it's sort of poetic vulnerability.
Okay.
You know, I mean, for me, discovering the artists that I discovered, is artists like Atmosphere, POS, Kid Cudi, Childish Gambino, when I was a teenager, what I noticed in them was this ability to be honest and vulnerable, and it created a sense of community. So I didn't feel so alone in the things that I was going through, because they were talking about it. There was this solidarity of sorts. So for me, it became a purpose of mine, the way I can justify myself in continuing to make art and not just doing it for art's sake, was by promising to myself that, you know, I would be as vulnerable as I possibly can, and perhaps try and create that point of relation and community for somebody else, you know? So that's the philosophy that drives it. And of course, I don't think, you know, as an artist, I never want to see my art sort of play into the bigger capitalist model when it doesn't need to, you know? Yeah. I feel like art should be something...
I'm not down on somebody who does that, by the way.
No.
It wouldn't be my preference, but yeah. I get it. Yeah. And people got to eat.
Yeah, people have to eat.
And eat loads, but it seems.
Yeah. Gluttons.
People have got to have a castle, haven't they?
Yeah, of course. I just feel that, for me, art is activism, and I don't want to tarnish it as a spiritual experience, okay. And I don't mean that in an airy-fairy sense.
I mean that in
an occupational sense, you know.
I'm not being rude. I'm actually googling at the moment, so I'm trying to find Kid Cudi. Did you
yes.
say?
Yes,
Childish Gambino.
Who is that?
He's a rapper and he acts as well. Do you think you might know him?
No, I don't know him. American dude?
Yeah.
Yes. So
he's
you probably know him as Donald Glover now.
No, that's Childish Gambino.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were talking about Childish Gambino.
Kid Thingy.
Kid Cudi. Yeah,
it was that.
He had a song called Day and Night that was gigantic. But his album Man on the Moon really affected a lot of people from my generation, and you know, many people said, you know, it saved their life because because hip hop was at that kind of time period was very much about braggadocio, and he kind of came out and was completely honest about what he was going through, you know,
which was always going to be what happened, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you could step back and go, I can see where this will go.
Yeah, yeah.
This will stop being about guns and drive-bys and all that.
Well, because that's what it was at its core.
I guess
it just came back home, you know.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
Is,
no,
which is
no,
a beautiful
absolutely.
Thing.
I think is he in Spider-Man as well? He did a song on the soundtrack.
It's such a weird reason why I've never heard of that man.
Oh, okay.
Until last night.
Oh, that is.
And the reason I was looking is I was checking if it was him, and I've got no signal on my phone, because I think I listened to him interview Pee Wee Herman last night.
Okay.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
Quite strangely, is that
has he got a podcast or something then?
Yeah. Well, he was interviewing on something, but in the interview,
like, as Paul Rubens. Sorry.
Paul Rubens. Do you know what? That's what I searched wrong then, because I put Pee Wee Herman. So yeah, Paul Rubens.
Paul Rubens. How funny.
Quite weirdly. So when you said that, I was like, is that that bloke from last night?
Yeah.
No, because I really liked him.
That was the thing.
So I was listening to it for Paul Rubens.
Yeah.
Because I was drawing Pee Wee Herman at the time. That's the reason I was doing it. So I was listening to some stuff about Pee Wee's Big Adventure and all that. And I found this interview with Paul Rubens. And I thought, I'm going to listen to that. It's half an hour long, a podcast.
Yeah.
And as they were talking, they were... like Paul Rubens was saying, so since you've been famous, and I was like, who's this bloke? Is it? I thought it was just a podcaster or something.
I would definitely advise listening to
his second album. Really nice.
He's very influenced by, I guess, other genres, so I guess to some extent indie and psych rock.
Yeah.
But he sort of wears his influences on his sleeve.
Yeah.
And for me it was sort of, you know, mind blowing because I grew up listening to hip hop, and the way hip hop is, the sort of the alchemy that hip hop uses is that it creates music from other musics.
Mm.
So hearing Kid Cudi's influences opened me up to other genres, you know. So I then went on to listen to, I don't know, let's say Bombay Bicycle Club or the Growlers, or you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So it's really important for me that, you know, hip hop artists do that. It's like and true to the essence of the culture, you know.
Have you ever heard of Run DMC?
Oh, of course. those guys.
I've got some of their records.
Oh yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
Beastie Boys have got some of their records as well.
Of them. I think you got
the early offensive stuff and the later credible stuff.
Incredible.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've played them on the show, played some Public Enemy, De La Soul, Tribe Called Quest.
Tribe Called Quest, my ultimate favourite.
Are they really?
Yeah.
I was like massively into hip hop as a kid, but I wouldn't be able to tell you anything about it now. Okay. Like, do you know what I mean? I wasn't savvy to it. I didn't really, I just liked it.
Mm.
I loved the Beastie Boys when they came out because I was exactly the right age for what they were doing. I was 13.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It was exactly the right age for that.
And
Beastie Boys led to DMC because they were with DMC so much, and DMC they were more credible at the time. But some amazing stuff from them. So I know that would probably be sneered at now when you're like, oh, that's not.
No, I don't.
You might
so.
As well say Vanilla Ice.
No, I think you definitely can't compare Vanilla Ice to Beastie Boys.
I think Beastie Boys hold
a place in the culture.
They do now.
When they first came out, they were very young boys.
They were posh white boys.
Yeah.
who had lots of girls in various states of undress dancing and stuff, which then they become, let's say, the term is woke, isn't it? Where they're like, apologise for that. Well, all kinds of.
They expressed regrets.
Yeah. which is fair enough, isn't it? Like, they happened, yeah. They were then there, and then now they're not. And they're very credible. We have a lot of artists that come on the show that you've been on before, Michael Payne and myself. Yeah, a number of people come in and name check Beastie Boys as like influencers.
Yeah, my best one was when they had all the girls dancing around. I have a lot of time for gratitude, but I do also think that was all really funny.
Yeah, there's plenty of hip hop, as you'll know, it is videos where you still see a lot of girls dancing around. It's not that part of it.
I liked the childishness of Beastie Boys. I really did. And I think even at a young age,
I think that's why people loved them, you know?
Yeah, but I think at a young age, even then, I think I got what I perceived to be irony.
Yeah.
I thought it was.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And then other people go, no, they're just little shits. So I was like, no, I think I think a song about the chorus
rights.
Is girls to do the dishes, girls to clean up my room. I was like, I think I get that they're not actually saying that.
I don't think they're being serious.
But who knows? But I think I was getting it then. And it certainly informed sort of humours that I had as an adult as well. That sort of stuff as well. But yeah, I'm not up to speed with rap now.
And I know Kid Cudi, so that's good.
Oh, I'm always listening to Kid Cudi, but only when he interviews Pee Wee Herman.
He's actually a very good actor as well. I've learned, like, he's very into his sort of indie music. Like, I think it was a Coachella where he was dancing solo with MGMT.
Yeah, well,
they
were a big part of some of his music, you know.
Right,
so, definitely.
I just felt overall when I listened to it, it's very rare that I'll listen to something and be engaged with the host more than the guest.
Yeah.
You know, because I've normally been looking for the guest to be, you know, that means you. And I just found, as it went on, I was like, I really like this man. Because it was like a drip effect. It was like, he sounds like he's really credible.
I'm definitely going to go home and watch that now.
Right.
It was an audio thing that I listened to.
There's clips of it.
Incredible.
It,
yeah.
Which is on the Talkhouse podcast, it looks like. Talkhouse film podcast.
He was just so generous.
Presenter on it, I wonder then? I'm interested in that. Was written okay.
He was really praising Paul Rubens.
Apparently, he's got a TV pilot. He wants Paul Rubens to star in it. He loves Paul Rubens.
Yeah, they spoke about that on it. Yeah,
amazing.
About it.
Okay.
Yeah. So I found it very. There was something very. There was no room for cool in it, which actually made him cool.
The fact that
he wasn't playing it cool.
Well, I think
that's cool.
That was his whole sort of ethos. Is that, you know. Whilst all this is going on in hip hop, I'm gonna do the other thing,
right? Yeah,
you know, and I think in doing that, he became very cool. He became an icon of sorts, you know, by being the counterculture.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't know why I got so excited when I heard that name, but it's because
I've
only just learned about.
Yeah, but the interview was in 2016.
I forget the name of the film, but he's in a really good film. He only plays a side character, but the film is amazing. It's an independent film. I'll dig it up and I'll find it. Yeah.
I think I know the one you mean with a guy whose mum's quite ill and he's got some major. Yeah, I've seen it.
Exactly.
And it's really good.
It's
I know
incredible.
The film's
like,
I'm going to find it for you too.
Is he too like famous to get him on the show?
If you get him on the show, you can call me down. I'll interview him like he interviewed Pee Wee Herman.
I don't think there's any harm in me trying.
I say, well, I've not really heard of you, but this bloke knows.
yeah.
It's like a competition. Stop worrying about kids.
Sorry, I'm just thinking at what the thing is because I want to recommend the film to you as well if you like it.
Do it on a text. So the EP is called Rap Poetics.
Yeah.
Is it out now? It's out already.
No, it's out on the 25th of October.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how is that still a thing, release dates?
I mean,
is it out in physical form as well?
Well, hopefully we're going to do some form of physical. I'm not quite sure what, but yeah, sadly I didn't have enough money to invest in vinyl this time around.
Yeah.
So next time maybe, but this time
it costs a fortune.
Yeah.
Vinyl. Yeah.
This time it's in the digital ether. So of course all the online platforms, but Bandcamp especially and YouTube especially, because I feel, you know, that's where you can share. In an artistic sense, the most, you know.
So do you do stuff through Bandcamp? Is that one of the things?
Yeah,
I like the ethos of Bandcamp.
So do I. I feel it's very helpful for independent artists. You know, people can pay what they feel, and I like doing stuff on YouTube because we do a music video for every song that we release. Just because I feel we're in such a visual time, you know.
Yeah.
I see when I'm writing this music, I see these images and it's nice to try and make that manifest in some way, you know, in real time. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's push people towards Bandcamp.
Yes, definitely. So they can pay the money.
Well, it's that thing, you know. I worry that the arse might drop out of all that sort of thing at some point.
Yeah,
but I mean,
yeah.
My main income, well, one of my main incomes really is from Patreon. So it's that sort of. I guess I worry the arse fall out of it because I'm like, I worry that that will implode at some point, which it could. But then I think I also have the strength of character nowadays to go, well, then I'll find the other thing that you do then instead. You know, you know what I mean? That
exactly.
You're constantly moving throughout your career, aren't you?
Yeah, you've just got to be able to adapt, I think, in this era.
Yeah, but I like that that presently the majority of audiences for things have taken it, have taken that ethos on board and gone, no, I get this. I'm not going to sit at home and complain that nothing's on the radio.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit at home and complain that, you know, that the telly's shit. I'm going to go and seek out independently made stuff that, and you will definitely find something. Yeah. There's no way you wouldn't.
And that's
no
why
way.
You see more and more people like coming back to the live show, and you know that's inclined. And you know, physical vinyl is inclined. You know, I was reading something that it's surpassed CDs for the first time. You know, so yeah, I think people have a need and a craving for something humanly tangible, you know, and be able to, especially in terms of the live show, be able to see that emotional exchange, you know. And you can't always get that from a Spotify link.
Not
you know?
At all, so. But so the topper to that is not only have they got that ethos and are subscribing to that ethos, they're also going, and I understand that in order for this to continue, I will have to bung them a quid.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's fine, because I've got Netflix and that's £8 a month.
Exactly.
You know, for stuff I don't necessarily watch.
Yeah.
I've got, you know, I pay my TV license because I've got to by law. So if I'm being, you know, if you're being cultivated in what you like and you're cultivating your own artistic things that you enjoy, then what? I don't get why you wouldn't.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
It's bizarre, isn't it?
Support local, support independent artists.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Because they're making the stuff that you actually like,
exactly.
Not the shit that you put up with on BBC.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. And we want them to continue, so therefore give them some money so they can continue making what they're
definitely.
Need to do.
It's a beautiful thing.
I mean, all that said, it's been genuinely a pleasure to chat with you, but
Thank you so much.
We're not paying you any PRS for this.
That's totally fine.
Did you say 25th?
Yeah, so 25th of October, 25th October on Bandcamp, which is otismensah.bandcamp.com.
Brilliant.
OTISMENSAH.
Are you on like Twitter or any social media stuff?
Yeah, so mainly Instagram, which is just, again, Otis Mensah, at Otis Mensah. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And it's Otis Mensah, OTISMENSAH.
That's the one, yeah.
Otis, it's been like genuinely lovely chatting with you, man.
Thank you so much
for
having me.
And all the best with it.
Cheers.
And this is Grand Finale Funeral Show.
Thank you.
Poets work riddled with malaprops. Well, we do know you now because you just did an interview.
It's Otis, isn't it?
So we know loads about your Otis, so I don't know why you're cracking on that we don't know you. Really liked him.
Yeah, he's a great guest. Really,
really
nice
liked
guy.
Him. Every now and again, not every now and again, actually quite often.
Yes.
That's what I'll say. Not every now and again, quite often in the studio. We have a feeling when people leave where you're like, their art's in the right place.
Yeah, we really like them.
They deserve support. They deserve to, you know, to do well and stuff. And he was one of them. And
definitely.
Reese as well, by the way.
Absolutely.
Same thing. I mean, we don't have to worry about Ed Hughes because he's already sorted, isn't he?
Netflix. It's got that Netflix show going.
Let me see if I'm... Let me just see. Can I skip through songs?
Not on there, you can't, no.
Not at all?
No.
Because this is Food, Glorious Food.
Yeah, what do we want?
Is this what we're waiting for? If we live till 84, all we ever get is gruel. Every day we say our prayers. Will we change the bill
Lovely.
Of first? Still we get the same old gruel. There's not a jot, not a jot. Can we find, can we beg, can we borrow or cash? But there's one thing that stops us from getting a fill when we all close our eyes and imagine food, glorious food. Basically what I'm doing, I'm playing through this.
Which is the bit you want?
Oliver.
Is that in this song?
Well, it says... no, maybe it's not.
I don't think it is. I think this is just.
Why can't I click through?
Food.
Can I click through on the other system?
Yeah, you can. If you double click it on the other one.
Hang on.
On the other screen.
Just pulling across. I'm not. Oh, I've got to stop it, Anna.
Double click it on that screen. Oh. The big screen.
Hang on.
The big screen. On that
I know,
place.
But oh, it's there. And sorry, it's still. Yeah. Apologies now.
Go to
sorry.
Play, but it's okay. Yeah, I'm putting it on both for you.
Okay, so I can get through the middle of that.
Can you see that?
I'm just
going to lean
over. Right. Bear with us.
Double click it.
Bear with us, caller. Bear with us, caller. I've double clicked it. Bear with us, caller.
I'll show you how to do it.
Just
no,
doing
no,
a bit
no,
of text
no,
stuff
over
here now.
Over here.
All right, okay. Oh, I see.
Then we can. This
right,
is where you
get
want
deep
to.
Into it then.
More?
Yeah, keep going.
Keep going. It's the wrong song.
I thought it did Oliver at the end of it. It's the wrong song.
The wrong song. What song do you actually need?
Oliver.
Making it short. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Alright, we'll get that.
Oliver from Oliver.
So it's just called Oliver. So, guys outside,
Look,
we're asking.
It's kicking off.
Yeah, they're chatting away outside. We need, that's the wrong song of Oliver.
It's her first day.
Sorry, but it's the wrong Oliver Twist song. We need the song Oliver from Oliver Twist.
It's her first day, Nat.
I know, but it could be our last day if this goes
it's wrong.
Yeah,
first day, and she's done a fuck up like that. That's
a fuck up, Irene.
We're on air here. We could be live.
Could be. We will be in the next right.
One day we'll be live, won't we not?
We will be. So what's it called?
I think it's just called Oliver.
Oliver. So it goes, karaoke Oliver, version of Oliver.
Oliver. Never before as a boy wanted more.
Okay, fine.
And for this one we'll have Bolivar, Bolivar. Ed Hughes is in a series on Netflix. Because Bolivar.
We're saying that we genuinely think it's a Colombian version of Oliver Twist. Yeah. Okay, no, that makes sense. We'll be like, oh, is it?
Because
not, it's not bad, is it?
I don't doubt for a second that Ed Hughes is lovely, but if he's not, it could go so
big
right.
Wrong. If he won't see the funny side,
it could
that.
Go so right.
What if you start with a straight face and say, "So
I'm not, I will."
So you're here to talk about Bolivar, the Colombian version of Oliver.
It will go so right. If he takes umbrage at that, that would be so good.
Yeah,
that again,
he won't.
No, it's like that chap, the bloke off EastEnders who I got under the skin of, and it's like I still think of that and laugh.
Okay.
Like that still really makes me laugh. Rude as he was,
right?
And
wasn't rude when he was on Sunday Brunch, funnily enough.
All right. Well,
recently.
Eggy as it was, the situation, I was thoroughly enjoying that.
I know you were. I wanted to, like, climb out the window. I was clawing onto my seat as I was like, oh God.
God, I enjoyed that so much.
For me, well, I think Ed will be great because, obviously, at some point, we're going to have to say, I know it's not about that.
My friend Laura listens to it regularly. I've got a friend called Laura, and she listens to it regularly, that interview.
Well, does
she? Yeah, and she messages me while she's listening to it. And her favourite bit, the bit that she loses her shit on, is there's one bit where he says something about, have you got hairy hairy armpits or something? And I go, well, no, here's the interesting thing. My balls. And she finds it really funny that I go, well, no, here's the interesting thing about that.
My armpits aren't. My balls are very hairy.
My balls aren't hairy because I shaved them. We've been through this before now.
About a million times. Yeah.
And also, you know that thing in Austin Powers where Dr. Evil talks about having his balls shaved?
Vaguely, yeah.
There's that thing. It's like, oh, it's a... And it's sort of like everyone's like wincing a little bit. There's no wince in there, it's fine.
If you do it delicately, I imagine.
You don't have to do it delicately, mate.
Yeah, but I know from shaving, you could get a shaving rash.
You've just got to pull them taut.
Oh, okay.
That's the rule.
Okay.
Pull them taut, so you basically you've got a handle down there. You pull the handle up to your tummy, right?
A handle?
You know, your penis.
Oh, okay, right, yeah.
Pull that so it's taut. So the scrotum, the sac that holds the testicles, is pulled taut, and then you can shave it, no problem at all.
What, so do it under them? Around them?
I go from beneath upwards.
Right. Do you have any hair, any pubic hair at all?
Yeah.
Oh, you do? It's just around
your
So it's just around your balls?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not around them, on the balls. The balls themselves.
What's the problem with having hair on the balls?
No, it just feels nice.
Oh, it's not to make them look bigger or something, right?
What, to make my balls look bigger?
I don't know. That's what guys do,
don't they? Yeah, that's what most blokes will look down and go, well, I could do with the balls being bigger.
No, but when you hear about the trimming of the pubic hair,
if I'm trying
some
to look,
guys,
make anything look bigger now, it's not the balls.
Okay, fine.
I'm not trying
to
make my balls look bigger.
Okay.
Ever.
But you don't shave the other thing.
What do you mean shave
thing
your...
in the middle?
Who have you been with that's got a hairy cock?
No, around it, not on it. Are you saying actually shave your actual balls?
I don't, like, make an incision and pull them out.
How many hairs do you have? Can you not just pluck them?
How many hairs do you have?
I mean, it's not like, you know, like...
It's as hairy as the pubis, if you left it.
Oh, okay, fair. Okay,
have you never seen...
I haven't really seen, like, balls that are, like, foresty.
I think they are sometimes. I mean, none of them is foresty down there. I've told you this before.
Okay, yeah, you have, yeah.
It's very sort of like, you know, you can see the skin through it.
Oh, God, that's good. Yeah. See the wood for the trees.
Yeah, you can. You can see all the wood and all the trees.
What a great oak.
Should we put a song on?
Yeah,
and then,
let's do it. Let's get Ed in from the Colombian version of Oliver Twist.
Actually, I see no reason why I can't play the karaoke version of Food Glorious
Food.
Weird.
No, don't peek too early on that. You have to.
No, I see no reason why we can't play that. They've been and got it for us.
Well, we're going to get the song that we want, though, now. Are you playing it?
Yeah, but here we are.
Oh, God.
It's already started.
Okay, all right, fine.
Do you know that I once.
We
used
to sing
this
it though, weren't
you? There was a section in the Peacock and Gamble podcast years ago where I would say a food, and the idea was that you said a food to make the listener think of that food because they've not thought of it for a long time, and make them want the food. So that title got longer and longer and longer.
Okay.
But we did it live once, and I did an introductory music bit, which was Food Glorious Food, as if I just messed about with it, tried to make an intro link.
Okay.
So it was this song with the lyrics. just chopped up in Audacity, and it went on for fucking ages. And then, and it kept going, food, which is this bit now. Anyway, enjoy it.
Okay.
Glorious Friends. That's just said, do you ever get so tired that you have a food craving? I've just got a food craving for Edam.
I do. What she said, I Edam. Really fancy Edam.
That's because I put it in your head, mate. Oh. Yeah, got it in your head. Edam. Eat some Edam, mate. Get Edam.
Let's use bath some Edam for me.
Get Edam in a bush shelter. Eat it in a bush shelter.
I would. Eat it anywhere.
Oh, I hope it's raining, so it's pitter patter on the top. That'll make you enjoy your cheese.
I'd eat from anywhere.
Edam.
Lovely.
It's the cheese of duchesses. Edam. It's the cheese of pigs. Edam. Don't put it in a dam. That'll stop all the water from coming out. Although that's what a dam's for.
I didn't know you were going to do a freestyle.
Put Edam in the dam. Make a cheesy water block. Edam. Don't care who you are. That'll raise your cockles, definitely.
Well, it'd be better with some lyrics in there, I think.
I did some at the beginning, didn't I? I had a go at doing it. We're joined now by Ed Hughes. Hi, Ed.
Hi there. How you doing?
I'm okay, thank you. I've got a little treat for you before we start, because I'm all up to date with the series that you're doing. Is that it? Is that right?
Yeah, that's the one. That's it.
Doesn't sound right.
Well, that's what I was told. That's what I asked for.
No, hang on. It probably is right.
You haven't got your headphones on. You pop them on, then you hear what the song is. Is this it?
Right, ready,
going,
ready?
Okay.
Bolivar. Never before has a series on Netflix done so well. Bolivar. Bolivar. Eddie Hughes is in it. It's on Netflix. Bolivar, because I've heard.
Wow, there's an introduction.
Yep, I have heard. So Bolivar, it's the Colombian version of Oliver, which is a really interesting idea.
Great,
I think.
Great concept.
That has been telling me all day.
Well, it's
all
one
about
of Colombia's most expensive TV shows. I've been looking up on the Bolivar.
Yeah.
Wikipedia.
So I think my first question is: in Colombia, is there an issue with pickpockets? Is that a thing that is that?
Well, there's a lot of very hungry people.
Yeah. So they go in like a gang with Fagan. It's probably called something different than this.
Probably.
And who do you play? Which character do you play in relation to Oliver? Either Dodger or.
Well, yeah, possibly. His right hand. Well, no. Who's the Artful Dodger's best mate?
Well, Oliver's the Artful Dodger's best mate.
So that would make me Oliver, kind of. There you go.
But weirdly, in the show, they've retitled his name as Daniel Florencio O'Leary, which is, not as catchy as that. No,
it sounds like to me that you are the Dodger character and I know that somebody else is the Oliver character.
Yeah, he's the sort of very trustworthy, loyal one.
Yeah.
Which is kind of isn't the Artful Dodger.
So how does it feel like? Do you mind me asking how old you are?
I'm 41.
41. How do you feel at 41 that you're playing the Artful Dodger?
Well, I always wanted to, actually. My brother did it when we were younger, and I never got to, so...
I always wanted to. Yeah. But I was a fat kid, and there was no chance.
No, not happening.
No chance. Hungry, same with Danny Zuko in Greece. Just wasn't going to happen. And I thought I might be able to wing Kaneki, but just have none of it.
I'd say there's more chance of doing the Greece one, because obviously they're hungry kids in Oliver. That wouldn't happen. But in Greece...
Oh, you're saying that I couldn't play one of the... orphans in Oliver? He's clearly not hungry, is he not?
But in Greece, I see no reason why I couldn't have played Zuko, Kaneki.
Little chubby Kaneki. Could probably have done that, couldn't I?
No, those gone for me.
Yeah, I think they've gone for me as well. I've resigned myself that I'm never going to play Frankenfurter.
Why?
I'm resigned now. Too old now.
Okay.
Far too old.
You never know.
Well, I always had this idea that I thought that Frankenfurter, because Tim Curry nailed the part so well, I thought that in subsequent Rocky Horror shows, it would be foolish to try and ape that, to try and...
No, you've got to do your own, put your own thing on it.
So I thought a fat little scruff bag as Frankenfurter still fits in the character. That character would still work if he was completely repulsive to look at.
That would be fine.
Rather than a beautiful, slender guy. Do you know what I mean? I did, because he's a twat.
All bets are off. We can do whatever we want.
Yeah. Maybe I will still play Frankenfurter.
Exactly,
there's
I'm
a
saying
chance.
don't rule it out.
Right, I'm going to get one of them things, them floppy cock things you can get there to pack yourself out that drag queens use.
Okay.
Just, just my own confidence. Should we speak about it properly now? So, we're discussing the show. Now, you said you've seen the show now.
No, I said it's on Netflix. It's on my list. It's on my list. I've added it to list.
Oh, you lied then.
No, I didn't say it's here. I said it's on Netflix now.
It is on Netflix now.
Is it dead serious?
Is
it now going to seem inappropriate that we've been dicking about and now you're going to go...
Well, it's about the greatest liberator of Latin America
that's
ever lived.
Which was?
which was Simon Bolivar.
Okay, I doubt that myself.
Who do you think it is?
I'll come back to it.
Okay.
Okay, I don't know anything about that.
No. So it was 200 years ago this year.
Okay.
Simon Bolivar was born in Venezuela in Latin America, and the Spanish had colonized all of Latin America.
Okay.
And so he grew up there. He was very wealthy as a kid, and then he basically gave it all up and kicked the Spanish out of Latin America.
Right, okay.
And he liberated. He was the only person in the history of humanity who was just a liberator, not a conqueror.
Mm.
So he went through the whole of Latin America, liberated Venezuela, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, and eventually kicked the Spanish out of Latin America for good.
And is this, and so as a dramatization of a real historic event,
yeah.
How accurate can you be with that?
Well, it goes from it's 60 hours worth. So you've
is it,
got,
yeah?
You've
got 60? Yeah, wow.
Yeah, we shot a lot of television.
Yeah. So how many eps is that, though?
Wow,
60 eps.
60?
As a series?
Yeah. I'm in 36 of them.
Wow.
You're off your fucking heads. Who's going to binge watch that? Well, what?
Well, it's six series worth. But I don't know. People
have all die?
People have messaged me saying they watched it in a week. I don't know how.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay.
The president of Venezuela went on television and said he watched it in 3 weeks. I thought, well, he must be a busy man, mustn't he? He's got a lot of time on his hands.
Going to be a coup.
Even on Netflix, it's down a season one with 60 episodes at roughly 50.
Imagine if Boris Johnson came 54. Tomorrow and went, I've just finished Orange, what is it, Orange is the New Black, just watched it all in one go.
Hang on, shouldn't you be...
What's this Brexit thing going on?
I've never seen a 60 episode season one, at roughly an hour long episode.
Is that the longest series that's ever been made?
I don't know.
I would imagine it would be.
I reckon, yeah.
I don't know.
Outside of a soap, you know.
That's what they do in Latin America. They shoot a lot of hours of television.
Yeah.
And all on location.
Yeah. So was it all shot there?
Yeah.
That's a couple of short ones at 43 minutes.
You can cram that one in. You
can get a couple of them, can't you, I think.
I will bet you anything. This is how cynical I'm feeling today. Bet you anything, when they were in production, they went, right, so I reckon people will be about to switch off.
Episode 17.
Because they'll be knackered. They'll be like, and then, so let's whack a 43 minute. They go, all right, I'll just watch one more because it's only 43 minutes.
Right, that's episode 8 where the 43 one comes in.
Unless it was heavily edited. Maybe something happened. Did you do any sex scenes that were cut out?
Yeah, they were. They were edited, yeah.
Did you do sex scenes in it?
I had to. Yeah,
did
mine
you?
Was edited, actually. I was disappointed.
Edited out completely?
No, they cut a lot of it out because it was quite graphic.
Probably get the rushes. Just ring them up.
Yeah. Could I get that?
I think I did really well in that. Yeah. I appreciate for the story you might like to cut it.
How many episodes have you seen? Have you seen 60?
No, I don't have that much time. I've got two kids. So.
Right.
You can't come on promoting a show that you've not even watched.
Well, I've watched as much as I can.
How
right?
did you know which one was
when
the
you
sex
got,
scene
when you
in?
Got, when you got, when you, I shot it, I was there.
This is brilliant. So we're going to promote it. Hey, Bolivar, it's on Netflix now. Watch as much as you can.
Yeah, well, I've got 2 months.
No, I get that.
You could do one a
and
day.
And you were there. You did it. You lived it anyway.
Yeah.
Right. So, and you're the only British actor in the series,
I am the only British actor in the whole series.
How was that then as a thing?
It was mad.
As a job,
yeah. It was proper mad, yeah. I'd never acted in Spanish before.
So you're speaking in Spanish in it as well?
Yeah, I'm narrating the series in Spanish.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
And you've got no Spanish?
No, I did speak Spanish before. I lived in Argentina, and my wife is Colombian.
Right,
so,
okay.
You know, we speak a lot of Spanglish at home.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'd never acted in Spanish before.
What an enormous thing this is.
I was pretty petrified when I first turned up.
Like, how long did it take you to film? Must have been a couple of years. 60 episodes,
no,
I think.
We shot it in 6 months.
Wow. They
crack it out. They really do. We shot, like, normally in the UK when you shoot a telly series, you shoot seven scenes a day, maybe, if you're lucky.
Unless it's doctors. If you're in doctors.
Well, doctors,
yeah,
they crack
it out. Yeah,
don't they? But we were shooting 16, 17 scenes a day.
So season two.
I don't think there will be. I'm not going to give a spoiler away.
70 episode season two.
I don't
two.
Think there'll be a season
okay,
two.
Okay, fine. I was like, that's going to take a while for someone to write that.
You already went. Yeah, well, what about season two?
Because, like, you know when something's a big hit, they go, let's tuck a few more episodes on it. It's now the 80th
episode.
Well,
it sounds like this is the complete story.
Right, okay.
Well, the good thing is I'm still alive at the end of 60 episodes,
there we go.
So we could do a little spin-off.
Don't angle for a spin-off.
Yeah. This is my Better Call Saul moment.
Literally get your agent to write in. He says he'll do 30.
But he's an amazing guy who I played. He was an Irish guy, went over at the age, when he was very young, and then basically fought in all the battles. 70,000 miles he rode next to Simon Bolivar. He wrote his memoirs, which are 32 books in Spanish.
Right.
And he's the only person who recorded it all. So he's kind of an amazing man, which loads of people just don't know about him.
Well, I didn't know about him at all.
No, his name's Daniel O'Leary from Cork.
Right.
And he was hard.
And when you're in, the process of doing that, because you know how many eps it's going to be from the off, and you know how many eps you're going to be in.
But they were kind of writing it as they were going.
Oh, were they? Yeah. So it was in production all the time.
Yeah.
Will you be handed a page as you're about to your next one?
Stage of that, if at all, do you go like, I'll just finish and end?
Well, no, but it's kind of, you know, when you grow up when you want to be an actor, and then someone says you're going to ride on a horse in rivers, and they're going to put a sword in your hand, and you're going to be in these massive battles and kill lots of Spanish people. Mm. Not that I want to kill Spanish people.
You might think that sounds like a 10-ep
series.
That's
an odd.
Yes. Sounds like
an odd drive for an artistic career.
Yes. Yeah. I didn't see the Spanish
side. One day you'll be able to kill Spanish people.
Yeah. But that's kind of every boy's fantasy, isn't it? So I had to pinch myself. We were shooting up in the mountains in Colombia at 4,600 feet. We were in the rivers. You never got sick of it. I mean, they would say in Colombia, "Oh, it's a really short journey," and it was 7 hours.
Right.
And I was
okay,
this is not a short journey. We'd be in top of Scotland by now.
Well, that's also a mini series for Colombia.
Yeah.
That was a really good joke.
Thank you.
No, just did a good joke. Just one a year.
That was amazing. Lucky you were here. That was clever
and nuanced.
Thank you.
I feel privileged.
Yeah, it was good. I feel shocked.
So do I, actually.
I can't get my head around that.
No, I can't.
I can't get my head around even watching it, but I also like the idea of, if you liked it, you know, if you started watching it and then you liked it, and then you were like, and there's another 58 episodes.
Yeah, but you think, you know, people watch Breaking Bad or whatever. That's 60 hours worth, but it gets released slower.
And they get a break. So there is a natural break that comes with that. So I presume this must have it in there somewhere anyway.
Yeah.
But you get a natural end of season, a climax, and then a reset. Or
you can choose to like take a couple of days off, take the weekend for yourself, come back on a Monday.
You don't have to watch all 60 hours.
All in one go.
Seems to be the only way that you can relate to it. But now I sort of see it as, you can have the Bolivar Challenge.
Oh, that's very true.
Where it could be like watching all the Star Wars films back to back. Where this is like, you've got to watch.
No break.
You've got to watch it beginning to end in one go.
You would have a 10-minute break every 7 hours.
No, you're not.
Not have a break at all.
No, Netflix you can get on your mobile devices.
You could just wander to the toilet with it. Yeah. You see no
just
reason for
on.
A break.
Just,
yeah,
just keep it. Keep
just
it
means
streaming.
You've got to stay awake for almost 3 days straight, which I think is really dangerous.
I think so, yeah.
How do you feel now? When did you finish it?
I finished it last October.
Okay.
And then I shot another 3 series out in Latin America.
Okay. Wow. How many episodes were there?
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
I shot one called Wild District, Distrito Salvaje, and that was like 2 eps, which was lovely.
That's fine.
And then I shot one called The General, which I was in 8 episodes of that. Okay. But that's like 50 eps as well.
Right. Wow, okay.
So I was very lucky.
So is it a weird thing now to be out promoting this when you've already moved on, you're already doing other stuff?
Yeah, it is a bit weird. Yeah. This whole thing of Netflix, you know, where it's in 197 countries and you have no idea when anybody's watching it.
Of course, yeah.
And then the weird thing of Instagram now is that people message you sort of directly and say, you know, I'm watching it, and you're like, oh God, it's out there.
It's quite imposing, isn't it, though, that as well? We were talking about that a little bit earlier on. It's quite an imposing thing, that, where you're like, because things aren't traditional releases now.
Yeah.
But it's on at the. Yeah. So if you were in a. So if this was on. If this was 6 eps and it was on ITV, then you'd know that your social media would peak on Monday nights when it was on.
Well, interestingly, they're doing it in Colombia now. They're showing it in Colombia on their national TV.
Okay, so are you
Monday
getting
to
stuff?
Friday, they do one ep every day.
Right, like Neighbours, but
gosh,
there more swords and Spaniards being killed.
Yes. On last week's show, which is happening in an hour, we've got someone coming from another Netflix show from Top Boy. Now they're lazy. We're ten.
So complicated.
Ten. I'm going to speak to him about the fact. Look at this work ethic. They got 60 going on there, and you've only done 10.
I will never complain again in my life. Honestly, I'll shut my mouth.
See, I sort of feel like I will never complain. Playing just because I've heard about it.
Can you imagine? Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I went home to a nice hotel and I kept thinking these guys didn't know if they were going
to
die.
And they were in a nice hotel
and they were probably sleeping on the back of a horse.
Yeah.
So I thought, shut your mouth, get on and do your job.
And learn your lines, which is a lot of them. A lot of lines from the narrator too.
Yeah.
Probably read them there.
Yeah. I was just cheated.
That was cheating.
I think I'm sort of slightly blown away by it. I think I've never heard of such a thing.
No, but you're saying in Colombia this isn't that unusual.
No, yeah. No. What I learned from them is that they crank out like 140 episodes sometimes.
But again, I'm not from Colombia.
Season one.
Well,
one
that's more like sort of soap opera.
Novella.
Things, but yeah, okay. Telenovela.
Telenovela. That's it. Yeah.
That's what I think. It sounds like a soap. It sounds like a soap, and I could see I've not watched a soap for years, and I could see myself getting. I've just got House, you know, House.
Hugh Laurie, yeah. Thing. Yeah.
And I got it because I saw two episodes of it. I'd never seen it before, ever, and I saw two episodes completely out of sequence. They were just on in the day one day, and I wasn't very well, and I was sat on the sofa, and I just left it on. I watched it for a few minutes, and thingy was in it, Darth Vader's voice, James Earl Jones.
James Earl Jones.
So he was guesting in it, and I was like, oh, this isn't, he was playing this dictator. I was like, oh, this is quite interesting. I was watching it. I was like, I think I really like this program. This is really good. And then I watched another ep straight after it.
Yeah.
I was like, I think I'm going to buy this. I'm going
to
get the whole...
Got a lot to get
and
through.
Eventually somebody bought me on my birthday.
Oh, wow.
And so I've got all them episodes, and I'm really looking forward
to crank through it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the idea of having something that, yeah.
Those are... it follows a very similar format, that show.
Someone, don't ruin it for me.
I mean, you've seen two of them, so you know what the formula is. Someone comes in ill, they diagnose it, they misdiagnose it, they figure out right at the end, and they nearly die.
Why would you do that?
Because you've seen two. I'm not saying what the illnesses are, am I? Or what happens
in Boston
plot
Legal?
Lines. Some of it, I liked it actually.
Right, well, we'll just say no, if you ever watch it, they win every case.
No, they don't. Right. Oh, no. People do
they
die.
They pretty
no,
much
no, no,
win
sorry.
Every case.
People do die in House, I should
say. Well, they
say.
Don't die in Boston Legal, spoiler alert. One of them's really ill for the whole thing, but he doesn't die at the end, right? Spoiler alert.
Oh, okay.
I've watched that recently. I watched it all again, Boston Legal.
Well, you love Boston Legal.
Loved
don't you?
It. Mm. Absolutely adored it.
How do you like James Spader a lot?
I like Marion though.
Oh, I love James.
Yeah,
Spader.
It's great, right?
Oh, good.
Well, tell her to marry
well, let's all just talk about James Spader for a while now. Well, we can't, can we? Because we're out of time.
We are. But 60 episodes of Bolivar is on Netflix right now. Put it onto your list to watch.
And Ed narrates and plays. I forgot his name already. O'Leary.
Daniel Florence O'Leary.
Okay.
Daniel but he's not Clarence happy with your O'Leary. Sex scenes, what you said.
Well, no, I was very happy. They just didn't put it in.
Well, what did they? Yeah, but the thing is, though, they don't add when you. When you make stuff like that, you're not meant to actually put it in. That might be what the problem is.
No, it's very professional.
Very professional, yeah.
How can you be professional in that situation?
Well, you do. You say hello to the actress and you talk about it, and then you get on and do it, don't you?
And then you leave and cut out.
Should we try one in next week's show?
No, no.
Let's just try one.
No.
But just be professional, Nat.
All right, fine.
See, it's that easy. Thanks so much for coming in, man.
Pleasure.
Thank you for joining
much.
Us today. Thank you to Reese Finley. Thank you to Otis Mensah and, of course, Ed Hughes. We'll see you again next week. Good night.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.